Hey, Navneet, are you able to give me screen sharing abilities or host privileges today? All
Yeah, I'll do that right away.
right, thank you so much. Hey Navneet, just so we can get things coordinated before the meeting starts, what can you see from your screen that I'm sharing? Is it just this one page here and like the head bars, or can you see the screen around it?
So I can see the combined OP document, and I can also see your tabs.
Okay, but you can't see like the backdrop or anything, like the
No.
background? Or if I were to like open WhatsApp?
I don't see that.
Okay.
Hey everybody, just wanted to check in, confirm that everybody can hear me. All good, that my mic's all checking. I had to change some stuff in my settings. I want to make sure y'all can hear me.
Sounds good. VP Draper, your mic is good.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
All right. I'm also noticing that we have a ton of guests in council tonight. So that's a great thing. But for guests of council that are looking to ask questions or like when they have the opportunity to in open period or whatnot like that, you do have to be a registered guest in order to speak. So just like Mitchell Pollock did from the gateway in the chat, if you open the chat, you'll see you'll see that they like sent a message into the chat there just with their name and association. If all of the guests could do the same, who have intentions of speaking, that would be more than appreciated.
Mr. Speaker?
Yes.
Very quick question for you before we get started, though I realize it is 6 p.m., so would you rather me ask you a different time?
No, I'm still trying to pull up the attendance, so now would be great.
Okay, sounds good. So I am trying to, in collaboration with Mark, to arrange a meeting for us to do a State of the Union address type thing, an update, as well as a financials update. As you know, Mark can talk for a while and indeed needs a lot of time to talk about this. So would you prefer, it's about a 50-50 split so far between councillors who have indicated a preference to me as to whether we do it, whether we vote to suspend standing orders and do it on the October 6th meeting as 2 half-hour presentation segments, or whether we call a special meeting on September 29th, being next week, from at 6 p.m. as usual council times to do this. And so I'm just wondering if you from your end have a preference, and could you let me know that?
I do have a preference, but to be honest, it comes from a kind of a conflict of interest. So honestly, like any way you go about it, but it, to be perfectly transparent, I am paid by the meeting. So if I were to be honest, I would say a special meeting would be good because your boys got bills to pay, but okay. I will leave that completely up to you guys.
From a governance perspective, just considering that we would be, in order to do it correctly, that mostly my concern is us having to vote to suspend standing orders is something I know isn't generally good governance to just presume upon doing. So that was my main reason in asking. But if that's not going to be a problem, then I can just make a decision.
I mean, like in good governance, standing orders, I mean, shouldn't really be broken unless they have to be. But if council decides that a special meeting of council would be like a more proper way of going about it, we can definitely put this as like a discussion item just briefly in today's agenda if you want to motion that from the floor later.
For sure. I'll think about that. Thank you.
Okay. That sounds good. But okay, it is 6:02 p.m. So we're going to start. We're going to officially call council to order here. I am, just quick update, I am screen sharing and trying to run all of this at the same time. So please bear with me a little bit if we run into some slight tech difficulties today. But the screen I'm sharing with you right now should be pretty good, and I'll kind of bounce between things. But we'll start things off with a territory acknowledgement. So we would like to respectfully acknowledge that our university and our students' union are located on Treaty 6 territory. We're grateful to be on Cree, Dene, Salto, Métis, Blackfoot, and Nakota Sioux territory, specifically the ancestral space of the Pappas Chase Cree. These nations are our family, friends, faculty, staff, students, and peers. And as members of the University of Alberta Students Union, we honor the nation-to-nation treaty relationship. We aspire for our learning, research, teaching, and governance to acknowledge and work towards the decolonization of Indigenous knowledges and traditions. Awesome. So with that being said, couple of, I guess, quick administrative updates. I do apologize that I was not at the last meeting of council, but you guys got to see Robert again, which was great. I was actually in the middle of moving back to the Okanagan. So I have, like, in the event that council does go back to an in-person environment, I know we were already scheduled to do so, but we obviously haven't. In the event that we are, I will unfortunately not be able to remain a speaker, but as your Zoom speaker, I can do anything, anywhere. Awesome. So we'll quickly roll into attendance with that before we get into our presentations, and we'll take the, I guess, the agenda and the minutes, the ones that most recently came out as prescribed. So President Agarwal.
Present.
Excellent. Vice President Draper.
Present.
Thank you. Vice President Lay.
Present.
Excellent. Vice President Cron.
Present.
Vice President Kidd.
Vice President Kidd is sick.
Okay. And Board of Governors Representative Conrad.
Yep. Hello.
Excellent. Thank you. I'm just going to pull up the chat here super quickly because I know a couple of you also message in the chat. Why can't I pull up the chat? Here it is. Oh, I've got too many screens open. Okay, Councillor Carbajal. Thank you. Councillor Dixon. Councillor Dixon.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you now. Perfect. All right, Councillor DeGrano.
Here.
Thank you. Councillor Marquise. Thank you. Councillor Oliveira.
Here.
Thank you. Councillor Veloso.
Present.
Thank you. Councillor Yabud. Councillor Yabud, are you here? Councillor Berhani?
Here.
Perfect. Councillor Saretsky?
Present.
Thank you. Councillor Ackerman?
Present.
Excellent. Councillor Batiki?
Present.
Excellent. Councillor Bid?
Present.
Excellent. Councillor Bose? Councillor Bose, are you here? Councillor Hariharan?
Present.
Thank you. Councillor Montero?
Present.
Excellent. Councillor Buchanan? Councillor Buchanan? Councillor Filipovich?
Councillor Filipovich is just getting back from her clinicals. I think she should be joining soon.
Excellent. Okay, thank you.
Sorry, this is Councillor Buchanan. I don't know if you heard me before.
Okay, thanks so much. Councillor Brandwine?
Present.
Thank you. Councillor Enerson?
Present.
Thank you. Councillor Badesha? Badesha?
I'm here.
Councillor Barazash? Councillor Barazash actually emailed me before. Councillor Dillon?
Here.
Thank you. Councillor Fotang?
Hello.
Thank you. Councillor Kamani?
Here.
Thank you. And Councillor Corday?
Present.
Thank you. I myself am here. Mark, are you here with us tonight? Take that as a no. Okay, so the first motion on our agenda here comes from President Agarwal. Actually, President Agarwal, you had a point of information?
Yeah, Mr. Speaker, can I make a proposal to amend the agenda to
do council the presentations section 2B first instead of 2A. And instead of being in camera, it'll be in public section as the report is now public as of yesterday.
Excellent. That sounds good. That's a quick and easy switch we can make as long as I can get a secondary for that. Perfect. Thank you, Vice President Draper. And I just have another note here for, I've seen a lot of guests still kind of coming into council. And if you're not a member of council, but you would like to speak in open forum and ask questions, you must register as a guest of council. And to register as a guest of council, you simply put your name and your campus association into the chat. And one of our admin staff will be able to note you down. But with that, we will go to the, presentation on academic restructuring at the University of Alberta. Is this the right title for it?
Yeah, this is the right presentation.
Okay, perfect. I'll kind of flow along with you, but if I get off, just like, I'll try to keep the slides going with you. But if I do get off, just let me know.
Sounds good.
Okay, floor is all yours.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you, everyone. There's a lot of people here today, and I'm very excited to be presenting on the interim report of the Academic Restructuring Working Group. So I want to first off say a huge thank you to everyone who's been providing feedback throughout the summer, throughout the past couple months. I have been on the Academic Restructuring Working Group. I've been looking at a lot of the changes to faculty structure and merging. And today, actually, as of yesterday, the report was published publicly. So initially, this was actually going to be a closed item where I wanted to gather feedback from council. But here we are today, and it's public, and I really want to get your feedback on this. So the overview of what's going to be happening today, if you can go to the next slide, is I want to talk about what the academic restructuring, what it actually is, why it's been happening in the first place. I want to go through the process, what's been accomplished over the past couple months, and where we are today. So you may have seen the report. It's on the late editions as well, and it's public on the website. What are the scenarios being proposed? And then what you as counselors can do in this entire process. So we'll start off and say that, the next slide, government cuts have happened. We all know that there were $100+ million in funding cuts to the University of Alberta that have put us in a very precarious situation. I want to say that before the cuts, a lot of discussion have been happening around how to make the University of Alberta streamline, how to have effective cost savings and operations and make the U of A efficient compared to other universities right now. So I want to make it clear that a lot of these conversations have happened, sort of started before the government cuts, but the government cuts have actually made it a more pressing issue to have cost savings. So NAUS and Uniform, you may have seen these two names. These are two large consulting firms that the university has been working with over the past while. And essentially they've been tasked with looking at how to improve the university administration, faculty structure, and really exchanging data and insights to have best practice, to really have the most streamlined services, to have the best student experience and save as much money as possible that could eventually go back and stream into student services. It could be streamed into interdisciplinary research and teaching here at the U of A. So in terms of sort of the larger context, I will say that this is the largest, scale decision that's happening. It's really in a very short time frame. And I can also say that all of the major U15 universities and institutions across the country are looking at the U of A like hawks. We are doing something very unprecedented. You've heard that term quite a lot. You're probably tired of hearing it. I am, but it's very ambitious, but it's very interesting work that's going on. So I'll give a high level overview of what actually is. So it's called the U of A for Tomorrow. That's broken into two large initiatives. One is the SET initiative, which is the Service Excellence Transformation, which essentially is looking at core administrative function restructuring. So restructuring vice president's portfolio, faculties, HR, IT, finance, all of those things to really save money and use that money for things that are more appropriate at a university and help in some of the duplication that we have. The second major initiative and what the focus of today's presentation is on academic restructuring, which in contrast is essentially about reviewing the organization and the role of our faculties and our departments, the role of our leaders and ensuring the structures that we come up with and the structures that evolve towards are supporting students, supporting the most amount of our teaching and our research at this university over the next coming decades. I think it's important that universities be nimble to the changing times. So we'll start off, we can go to the next slide here. I'll talk about what the Academic Restructuring Working Group actually is. So this is a graph that actually shows some of the faculty models across U15 institutions in Canada. So we can see that the U of A is actually an outlier in terms of having the largest amount of faculties. U of A, it's tied with Laval actually, and the fewest being Waterloo, McMaster, and Queen's. The data does suggest that there is little correlation between structural complexity and institutional reputation rankings, but it's really interesting to see how this compares to other universities. So the three major approaches that have been what this process will look like is on the next slide. It actually boils down to de novo, consolidation, and hybrid. So Jared, if you go to the next slide, you can see that there. Essentially, the first approach is really starting from scratch, like cutting down all the faculties and seeing where we can build up things, really just scratching everything, starting from the beginning, really looking at things. This would be really hard given the tight time frame that we have. The second two are consolidation and hybrid. So consolidation, really looking at combining existing units, trying to see where we can streamline, where we can promote interdisciplinarity on our campus. And then hybrid is combining existing units and working towards reconfiguration there. So the recommendation from the working group is actually to look at the second and the third approach, which is, leads to the scenarios that are on the table. So there have been a lot of scenarios that have been discussed over the past few months and a lot of feedback in town halls. And the three scenarios that we are that are being recommended are now going towards public consultation. So we'll move on to the next slide, which is, I want to talk quickly about the process. So in terms of the process, the Academic Restructuring Working Group was actually created back in April. Initially, it didn't have any student representation, and I was able to push at the Board of Governors to have student representation, now of which the president of the UASU and president of the Grad Student Association are now on the on the working group. So I will reiterate that the work that has been done so far has been very high level. There have been bi-weekly meetings. We've been looking at a lot of the data from NAUS, the consulting firm, as well as Uniform data, looking at the options and models. So we started off with like 12 models. We got a lot of feedback, from town halls, from council, etc. Looking at questions from CSJ, Augustana, Native Studies, Autonomy, Identity. The next slide shows consultation that's happened so far. So currently, the working group has been doing consultation in various forms through Dean's Council, presenting at Students' Council, GSA, Board of Governors, various GFC subcommittees. And I want to say that I'm really pleased with the feedback that we received on council a couple of weeks ago. So you can go to the next slide. And I want to highlight quickly some of the major key concerns that I heard from Students' Council. The big ones, the issue around Campus Saint-Jean, Augustana, Faculty of Native Studies, having those, understanding that those faculties and, provide a really great community aspect, a really central part of what our university is like, and we really wanted to maintain that. Pushing, you know, important things like faculty autonomy and identity. Those are things I've heard from many counselors many, many times. Looking at what EDI looks like in this process, looking at what other universities are doing, frontline services, ensuring that, you know, things like academic advising are not hurt or harmed in this process, and student representation. So I will say that I was actually part of the a sub-working group on the ARWG, which specifically looked at Campus St. John Augustana and Faculty of Native Studies. And I've been pushing very hard and taking the feedback I've heard from council to the working group and ensuring that those voices and the student perspective as a whole is really represented on this group. So the next slide sort of leads us to where we are today. So the working group has come up with three scenarios to bring towards wider consultation to figure out where we can go from there. So I want to encourage you all, if you haven't already looked at, if you haven't looked at the complete, the report by the Academic Restructuring Working Group, it's public, it's online, it's on the late editions, as I mentioned earlier. Please take a look at it. It's pretty long, but you can kind of get a sense of what the models are. But today I want to present to you the three scenarios, and what I want you to do is you know, really think about this from the student experience as well as from the university perspective, is how we can make these changes the best experience going forward. And there will be some time at the end of this to you know, provide feedback and questions. So we will go through the three scenarios. So I want to start off with scenario A. So this scenario is the health sciences consolidation scenario. So this first scenario is really looking at a faculty of health sciences. So for example, it would be essentially merging the faculties within, so for example, public health, rehabilitation, medicine, pharmacy, kinesiology, sport and recreation, and nursing would be merged into a faculty of health sciences. So one of the things about this model is that it would be the simplest shift, it would be the least amount of disruption at the university. And you know, there would be cost savings around $10.6 million, which in comparison to the other two models is actually the lowest amount of savings. Some of the, if you go to the next slide, you can look at some of the cons, some of the disadvantages potentially for this model is that it saves the least amount of money. So if this option were to be selected, there would be, and then this is really important, is that if this were to be selected, there could be potential for a lot more department level closures and mergers and program closures. So I want to remind everyone that this whole process that I'm describing here is very high level. We're not looking at department closures. We're not looking at program closures right now. We're simply looking at faculty structures. So one of the things about this model is that there could potentially be down the road more closures to programs and departments because of the lack of savings. One of the other disadvantages of this model is that the lack of interdisciplinarity is quite evident, as you'll see when we move on to the other two models. It would be the simplest path, obviously, it'd be the least amount of savings, but it wouldn't be really changing how siloized our campus is right now, how decentralized, and the lack of communications between the various faculties. We'll move on to scenario B. So scenario B is known as the tri-agency alignment. So as you can see here, there would be three major faculties centered around essentially the tri-council agencies federally. So I'll explain that in a moment here, but the three faculties would be, as you can see here, health and medical sciences. The second would be natural applied sciences, and the third would be social sciences and humanities. And then the major thing here is that Campus St. John, Augustana, and Native Studies would retain their autonomy and their identity, and they would remain as separate faculties, which is feedback we've been receiving from a lot of community members, a lot of students, and a lot of people in at the U of A. So some of the pros for this model is that, so these three, so one thing to note as well is that these three would be named as the big important thing here is that these three, so the health and medical sciences, natural applied and social sciences, and humanities, those three would be known as as departments, but everything under those would be known as faculty. So everything would be retaining their, I'm mixing things up. It would be called a division, and everything underneath would be retaining their faculty status, which is something that you as council have brought up as well, and I've heard from many people, is that identity and that autonomy. So that's certainly a pro, is that faculty status would be remained. Some other pros for this model, if you go to the next slide, is that faculty would be focused on academic delivery and programming, whereas the divisions, so the three major categories and the other three, would be focused mostly on administration. This model has the most amount of cost savings. So in total, it's around 43 million dollars in savings, which is the highest of any of the three scenarios. And again, that amount of savings would be redirected into, you know, the student experience as a whole, to the research and teaching, to really enhance the overall experience on campus. One of the other really good things, if you actually go back to the last slide, Jared, is that it's uniquely set up to mirror the federal research funding agencies. So if you look at the Tri-Council agencies that provide funding to universities across the country, it's set up into three major funding bodies, which is SHRC, which is for Humanities and Social Sciences Research Funding. The second one is the NSERC, which is for Natural Sciences, Applied Research and Engineering. And then the third is CIHR, which is the Canadian Institute of Health Health Research. And this would really streamline that process. So it's certainly a benefit here. Some of the cons for this would be that this would be the most amount of work and very ambitious, would be very complex initially, but again, potentially leading to a lot more communication between traditionally siloed, lack of communicating faculties on our campus. And one of the cons, which could also be a pro, I guess, or a benefit, is that this impacts all of the faculties sort of equally. So there's sort of everyone bearing the brunt of the changes that would be going, though this could be very positive, actually, in terms of how it is implemented. I want to go to the last scenario, which is scenario C. So this scenario actually looks at three major units, which would be faculties with schools under each of them. So when you're looking at the three on the right-hand side of the presentation, you can see there's arts and sciences, there'd be health sciences, and then applied sciences, which would have you know, the subsections that would completely be merged. And then you would have the Faculty of Medicine and Dentistry, which would be completely untouched in this scenario. And you would have, in the left-hand side, you'd see the dotted line, which actually refers to a divisional unit, which provides common leadership and administration, sort of a centralized admin to shared services across those six faculties. So Faculty of Law, Native Studies, Campus Saint-Jean, Augustana, Education, and Business would be connected through a central admin hub. So one of the things about this in terms of its pros is, I mean, this it maintains the autonomy of the of Campus Saint-Jean, Augustana, and Native Study. It, you know, saves a good amount of money. See, in this model, it saves around $35 million. And one of the potential disadvantages, I guess, is that this doesn't really touch upon interdisciplinarity as much as some of the other models seen in scenario B. And we can see that there's less savings than scenario B without delivering as clear of benefits as we've seen before. So moving on to the next slide, Yeah, we talked about advantages and disadvantages. We can go next. I want to talk about what is next. So in terms of the process, tomorrow this is going to be presented purely for recommendation at the Academic Planning Committee. So it's not being voted on. This is just for feedback. And then this is going to be presented at GFC next Monday as well. Again, this is for feedback. There'll be more feedback. There'll be more consultation on these models. And then later on in the semester, I think in the next couple of months, there will be final voting at the Board of Governors. I want to say again that this is, I'm bringing this forward to you folks today to get your thoughts on this, to really see what, you know, what you're thinking about it. I've been seeing a lot of movement on social media, and I think it's really interesting to see the discussion that's going on with this. We'll go to the next slide. Yeah, so why I brought this to you folks, I thought, you know, I've been updating you all in my council reports for the past 5 months, and it's finally become public, and I think, you know, I really want you folks to be bringing feedback to me so I can take it back to the Academic Restructuring Working Group. Again, this is stage one. After this, we'll see how this develops. But yeah, so I want to open it up to questions. Go to the next slide. I guess, yeah, it's the last slide. Any questions, any feedback on these models? I'm happy to take any comments. I'll be taking notes as well. So I will open up the floor to questions.
Excellent. So with this, thank you, President Agarwal, for the presentation. So just like before, any members of council can ask questions during presentations, and I'll just take the speakers list from the chat. But we have 9 minutes for questions right now. We'll start off with Councillor Baticki.
Hi, thank you so much for that presentation. It was very well thought out. I was just wondering a little more about scenario B, where you get sort of the three big divisions. You said that faculties will retain their faculty status. I was just wondering what, if they're retaining the faculty status, like what some potential large impacts on individual faculties would be in that scenario. Thank you.
President Agarwal.
Yeah, thank you for the question, Councillor Baticki. Yeah, so that's one of the biggest things that I've heard from a lot of people is, you know, that autonomy, like you mentioned, that faculty, that independence. So in terms of like, I'll say this again. I think the process of through which the Academic Restructuring Working Group has been looking at is very large scale in terms of faculty. So I think in scenario B, it actually poses the best option for further down the road, the least amount of closures or effects to departments or programs, because this model actually has the most amount of savings, which could eventually you know, be translated into the least amount of closures later on. I think what would be really helpful is that, for example, if you look at the middle model, the natural and applied sciences, you'd have science, you'd still have a faculty of science, you'd still have a faculty of engineering, faculty of ALES, but they'd have a centralized sort of administrative unit. So I think what would be really the biggest impact is that, you know, there'd be that streamlined effect. There'd be, you know, that, economies of scale, which would really impact how streamlined services are delivered, as well as I think potentially even easier for students to navigate through in terms of finding resources. I also mentioned earlier the potential for the option B being really streamlined in terms of funding and research. So I think all of those are pretty positive things there. I hope that I answered your question.
So thank you, President Agarwal. I'll look to Councillor Enerson.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and thank you very much, Joel, for the presentation as well as advocating for students. I think I speak for all of us here that we appreciate it. The one thing I wanted to touch on, and I just want to make it, you know, as a preface real quick, that I'm not ragging on you as it was just something I read today from the Gateway that I was curious about hearing your feedback from. They were saying from an interview that some members of the University of Sydney did with Ashwa and NASA, that the restructuring really hurt the student culture on campus to the point of a direct quote even saying, a culture of students feeling like it's a degree factory. I was just kind of curious how the restructuring group is going to address that to make sure that that's not what the U of A becomes.
President Agarwal, go ahead. I'll not call upon you, or I'll not call upon anybody being asked a question, just because I'm trying to do multiple things at once here.
Okay, sounds good. Yeah, thank you for the question, Councillor Enerson. You know, the University of Sydney is one university that, of many universities that the Academic Restructuring Working Group has been working with. I'll say this again, that the consulting firm that the university hired was Nous, and they've been doing a lot of research into a lot of U15 universities in Canada, as well as Australia and the UK. To your point about what the student experience was afterwards, I think it's really, I think there's a lot of universities that have really benefited from this. I think in terms of Sydney's, University of Sydney specifically, if you look at their ranking, it's actually ranked 51st in the world, as opposed to the University of Alberta, which is actually, we're sliding in our rankings. We're now, I think, at 131, if you look at Times Higher Education rankings. And that's one of the things that, you know, rankings is one issue, of course, and then the student experience for sure is another issue. I think it would actually, it would really, I think, be beneficial to look at some of the other universities and how they have been approaching restructuring. So in Canada, you're right, like this is very, very new. This is happening very fast. But, you know, those are things that I'm bringing to the restructuring working group all the time. You know, for example, one of the things which may be a result of academic restructuring, but also from the SET initiative, which is the administrative restructuring, is how does the student experience from front life services, how would that be maintained? So for example, academic advising, I'm really harping to ensure that that is still a priority and that students know where to go. So I think there are pros and cons, and we need to really look at how we can manage these changes. And when you look at change management, ensuring that we anticipate some of those things. So if you folks think there are any things you think might be coming up or things that you can anticipate, definitely let me know. I'd be happy to bring those to the table.
Excellent. Thank you, President Agarwal. I'll look to Councillor Oliveira here.
Thank you so much for that presentation, Joe. So you mentioned that scenario B may avoid departmental closure and mergers. And I was wondering if you could elaborate a little bit more on that, because I come from a department that's very small and is suffering a lot of cuts and possibilities of being merged with other departments. So I would be like very supportive of a model that may like help the small departments thrive or survive a little bit better.
Yeah, thanks, Councillor Oliveira. Yeah, I think one of the big things here is that the work that we're doing is high level and focused specifically on faculties. So there's no conversation right now about what's going to happen with departments, no conversation about what's happening with specific programs. That's something that'll happen at a later date, but sort of in anticipation of that, I think that, you know, if you look at Model A, for example, which has essentially everything is intact, but the only changes would be made to the health sciences faculty, with a saving total of 10 million as opposed to the 40 plus million with scenario B, I think that would actually lead to potentially more department closures, because quite frankly, the university, given the fiscal state it's in with the government cuts, it's gonna have to do that. And if the university doesn't find savings from other ways, it's gonna trickle down, right, to your departments, to your faculties, and to other programs. So yes, I do agree. I think scenario B would be the best option in that sense. It would have the most savings. It would have the most amount of interdisciplinary collaboration, which is something you hear me talk about all the time. We love interdisciplinarity in this house. But yeah, I hope that answers the question.
Excellent. Thank you, President Agarwal. I'll look to Councillor Hariharan.
Thank you for the presentation. It was very to the point and brief. I really liked it. But I have two questions. The first one is about the tri-agency scenario. Both my concern in that is like both science and engineering are very large faculties. So how efficient would it be on merging such two large faculties into having into one division, and how would that take place? And that's my first question. Should I say my second right now, or you would like to answer that first?
Yeah, you can say your second one. I'll just.
My second question is on what is about the scenario three, about what exactly is shared leadership between the different faculties, and why was that proposed versus having a division of all the faculties together in the scenario three? Yeah.
Yeah, so thank you for the question, Councillor Hariharan. I can say to your first question, in terms of cost savings, it's all about economies of scale. So from all the data and all of the conversations that I've been hearing, bigger faculties are more efficient because they rely less on generalists. So for example, if there's more specialists in the faculty, there's less pay. Smaller faculties actually need more generalists. So in terms of, you know, the Faculty of Science and the Faculty of Engineering, they are large faculties, but there would be a lot of cost savings in sort of the administrative side. So they would still retain their autonomy, they would still retain their identity in terms of the academic decision, the direction of their of engineering and ALES. But in terms of, like, for example, financial aid applications, you know, things like that, that would be where the economies of scale would happen, and the potential the duplication of resources. I'm trying to remember what your second question was. I think your second question was around the scenario C. I think so. The scenario C is really looking at a hybrid divisional model. So what would be the in scenario C, the case is that the dashed box really is a divisional unit that provides common leadership and shared services, and then those six would still be faculties. So to answer your question exactly why those why it's set up in that exact way, I can't say. I think it's because those are the units that we felt that would fit better as independent. And then the three major one, or the four, I guess, medicine, arts and science, health, and then applied sciences would be the separate structures there.
Excellent. Thank you, President Agarwal. I'll just quickly look for a motion to extend. We've got 5 minutes to extend here before we have to break standing orders. So I'll just look to extend by 5 minutes so that we can finish the last two of the questions. Councillor Bowes. Thank you, Board of Governors, Representative Conrad. Perfect. Councillor Carbajal, you have the floor here.
I just have two concerns / questions. So in scenario C, when Augustan is like under this division, although they remain a faculty, like in terms of like services, how would that work? Because again, if most of the leadership services are centralized in North Campus or within Edmonton, how are students going to have access to that? Since, we do have a large international student population, and most of them don't have easy transportation. And it'd just be a problem in terms of like getting those services. So I was just wondering like what would happen in that case. And then my other concern is, as far as my understanding, like Augustan isn't really being shut down in any of these scenarios, but today I received an email from a GFC member that's also kind of trying to get support because their faculty is kind of undergoing the same situation, and they said that it has been submitted for cancellation. So I just wanted to have some clarification on that because I didn't know that there was any like cancellation in mind. Thank you.
Yeah, so thank you for the question, Councillor Carbajal. I think one of the big issues to touch upon what would happen in terms of Augustana, even CSD and other campuses, is that, you know, when we're looking at consolidation or merging for a lot of these faculties, and we're talking about back-end administrative services, so, you know, for example, things like HR, finance, not necessarily student-facing student services. So in those in that sense, I wouldn't be too worried about it. In terms of cancellation at Augustana, I haven't heard anything in terms of campus or Augustana as a whole. I can certainly look towards that, and unless you're referring to what's happening at the General Faculties Council, I can certainly get back to you on that.
Excellent. Thank you, President Agarwal. For the last question here, Councilor Buchanan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And thank you for the presentation, President Agarwal. My question is, premise is a concern that this report has given some clarity, but it also raises a lot of questions that you may not be able to even answer right now. One is, the faculty status is preserved for many faculties that was a major concern. However, with the possibilities of, you know, divisions or almost a super faculty in a sense, are faculties going to be hollowed out? How is that going to fit into the practical governance structure of the university? Other presumably, you know, GFC won't be as affected that much because the faculty should still be retained, but is there going to be other levels where these divisions, deans of these divisions, leaders of them are at another level, and how do we know that's going to look? And then also academic integrity and autonomy seems to be being retained, but it's definitely a big open question on what services are going to be shared, which ones are unique and are going to be more essential to be kept at the faculty level. And I'm not sure if there's a big answer to that right now, but it is a large question on how those decisions are going to be made.
Yeah, thank you, Councillor Buchanan. Those are very important points that you raise. And I think that one of the things that we've been pushing for is, and then I've heard this many, many times from many different people, students, faculty, is, you know, that autonomy, that identity. But, you know, I'll say this again, is that this, a lot of these changes are looking very broad level at the faculty level. So, you know, in terms of how this would affect academics, this would certainly give the academic units, so the faculties, a lot more autonomy, but also that clear interdisciplinary conversation with the other faculties within those divisions. So if you're looking at scenario B, which seems to be the most the best scenario from the student perspective as well as from the university's perspective, a lot of these changes could have impacts on, you know, for example, Dean's Council. It could have impacts on what the makeup of certain committees are, GFC. That is not being looked at through this, through the Academic Restructuring Working Group. We do know that there is a larger scale conversation, and you've heard this from the presentation by VP Lay on Alberta 2030 as to what the system-wide post-secondary institutions across Alberta actually look like in terms of structure, in terms of how funds are allocated, in terms of representation. So, you know, that's something that I am, you know, keeping a very close eye on. I think representation on GFC, on, you know, even the board level, is really important. And, you know, keeping a close watch to ensure that those avenues are maintained. Yeah, I hope that answers the question, but I can certainly follow up afterwards if that didn't, or continue this conversation.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Well, thank you, President Agarwal. We'll look to bring this to our next presentation here while I try to rifle down the order papers to find it. Joel, how long is this report?
It's about 100 pages, so I don't expect everyone to read through all of the 100 pages, but if you do, props on you.
Was this still in the report, or is this the next presentation?
Right at the end, Mr. Speaker. I think it should be.
Oh, I can't do that.
Maybe it's actually right before the report. I can't remember. Oh, sorry. Sorry, Mr. Speaker. This was the presentation is actually on the order papers, not on the late editions.
You would be right with that.
Yeah, sorry about that.
So I'm trying to navigate through.
And I'll just say, if you didn't have a chance to ask any questions, I'm happy to take questions afterwards. Like, feel free to email me. I really want to get as much feedback as I can to take to the restructuring working group. This is a very, very critical time. There's a lot of these changes are going to have really big impacts on our university, and so I want to make sure that I'm getting all the different angles as possible. So feel free to shoot me an email or get in contact afterwards.
Navdi, do you remember what page this was on? We're too far now.
Right at the bottom.
The presentation?
Yeah.
Oh, you just snuck it in there. Okay. So we will look to move on to our next presentation here. So President Agrawal is motioning to present on the governance restructuring task force. But if I could call for a secondary to the motion. Perfect. Thank you, VP Karan. Excellent. President Agrawal, you've got 15 minutes.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So you're probably all tired of hearing me already, but as the second major presentation. So you've heard a lot of the pretext around academic restructuring, what's going on in the university context. And what I want to do today is propose an approach to looking at our internal structures here at the Students' Union. So I want to remind you all that you are all, as counselors, you're members of essentially the board of directors of the Students' Union, which is a $14 million organization. You know, we employ over 250 staff. And one of the things that we need to be doing is really looking at how the university structures are going to be impacting our structures, whether it be council, whether it be, SRAs, whether it be COFA, CORA, etc. So the presentation today is a very high level presentation essentially of a proposed task force, which I am proposing today the discussion is just a discussion. We're not voting on anything. We're not doing anything essentially. I want to put this forward to you. So we'll go to the next slide. So what would the mandate of this task force look like? And I realize it says mandate of the committee at the top. It should say mandate of the task force. This would be essentially a task force of council. It would be an ad hoc task force, which would be essentially tasked with developing recommendations for structural changes to the Students' Union governance models, identifying processes and strategies for implementation for groups such as council, council of faculty associations, the Council of Residents Associations, Student Representative Associations, and really looking at the overall, the mandate of our Students' Union, how it would impact this, our strategic mission, looking at values of our SU, working towards, through the lens of EDI. This task force would work very closely with the Equity, Diversity, Inclusion Task Force, which Katie, Vice President Kidd chairs, as well as coming up with a recommendation report, which ultimately council would have the delegated authority the authority to vote on in terms of any proposed recommendations coming forward. So high level, what this task force would look like, it would be a task force comprised of students, community members at the U of A from various groups, and they would be split into two sort of working groups. So the two committee working groups underneath this task force would be looking at two very different issues, one focused on council issues and the other one focused on academic, one focused on SRAs, CORA, and COFA. They would both be working to provide research, combining, doing a lot of consultation. This group would be consulting student groups, council, RAs, SRAs, residents associations, faculty associations, multiple community members. And then the governance restructuring task force would comprise of the total members of both those two subcommittees. And after which, a report would be written by the governance restructuring task force, which is the GRTF, we're calling it GRTF, which would be essentially at the in the course of the next few months brought to council for approval. So I want to be clear that although these two working groups are small in membership, they will be doing intense consultation with many groups. So if you go to the next slide, this is proposed. So this is the mandate essentially is. It'd be operating through the two working groups, as I mentioned, be looking at what changes are being made from the university side of things, where the academic restructuring and how that's going to impact the students' union in terms of our membership, whether it's council, SRAs, FAs, and as I said, council would have the final authority. Next slide, we look more detailed into the proposed membership. So the first sub-working group would be the Student Representative Association Restructuring Working Group, which would be comprised of myself, one executive who is on CORA or COFA, one member of COFA, one member of CORA, one member of a campus association, and one member of the Aboriginal Students Council. If you go to the next slide, the proposed membership of the Students Council Restructuring Working Group would be myself as the president, one exec who is not on CORA and COFA, and then four non-executive students counselors to really look at a lot of the process, a lot of the issues that are being determined here. So I want to reiterate again, this is very high level. This is just a presentation to inform council that in the next council meeting, we will be bringing forward standing orders, specifically getting this task force, ad hoc task force put together, and then the task force will be tasked with doing a lot of the brunt work, coming up with the report, looking at what the issues are, working very closely with the EDI task force, working very closely with student constituents on campus, and then ultimately coming up with a report presented to council, which can be moved to create the best streamlined services to make council our structures in the students' union the most appropriate and the most relevant in changing times. I think, you know, during time, it's important to also understand that every few years, it's important to reassess our governance structure and see if it's really fitting with the current models. So I'll keep it at that. If you go to the next slide, I will open up to questions. If there are any thoughts right now, I just want to remind you all that nothing is being voted on today. Essentially, I want to hear what you think about this. And then at the next meeting, we will be setting up the task force, which will be doing the work over the course of a few months, which probably in early January, February, maybe we'll be working towards some finalized recommendations. So with that, I'll open it up to questions if there are any or any feedback on this.
Excellent. Thank you, President Agarwal. So we do currently have about 9 minutes for questions, but we'll look to extend afterwards if need be. But the speakers list is open and just waiting for names now. Councillor Buchanan, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Agarwal, could you clarify, I mean, you just mentioned talk about January, but provide further clarification on the timelines we'd be possibly looking at. January seems to be possibly, you know, a little bit soon, considering we, although there may be an idea of the direction universities are going, but the final decision on university structures are very close to that deadline. And so that could impact the research of these task force.
Yeah, thank you, Councillor Buchanan. Sorry, I kind of just threw January out there as an arbitrary date. Once the task force is set up, the task force would determine when timelines are appropriate. You do raise a good point. At this point, it's a very high level. It could be actually later on. I think you do raise a good point, but the task force would essentially determine what the timelines are, what the principles are, what the mandate is, things like that. So at this point, I'm really just looking for feedback on the proposal to create the task force.
Excellent. Thank you, President Agarwal and Councillor Buchanan. I'll look to Councillor Dixon.
Hi, I just had a clarifying question. So, sorry, my brain is like half dead. So in the, there's two different versions of the committee possibly, and did the second one not have a representative from ASC? I'm just clarifying.
Yeah, thanks for the question, Councillor Dixon. So I just wanna remind everyone that, there are two working groups that are looking at two very sort of different issues. So, for example, the one representative of AFC is actually on the working group that's looking at SRAs, COFA and CORA, but the total membership of the Governance Restructuring Task Force is the combination of both of those working groups. So those voices will be interacting and working together at the end of the day, and that's something that that's one piece. The second piece is that the membership is small, as I mentioned earlier, but there will be very heavy consultation on this. So there will be consultation directly with, you know, ASC, directly with ARC, directly with student group representatives, faculty associations. And that is essentially the direct line of communication between all of those. And as well that we're also going to be having a very clear line of communication, working very closely with the EDI task force. I hope that answers the question.
Excellent. Thank you, President Agarwal. I'll look to Board of Governors, Representative Conrad.
Hi, Joel. Thanks for the presentation. You're doing really well tonight. So just along that line that Councillor Dixon put forward, page 30 of the ARC recommendations, as long as we're maintaining that Aboriginal stakeholders are present at any meeting at, in which Aboriginal students are discussed, that's right, like just as long as we can meet that. And then page 32 as well, just wondering, because we had this conversation in CAT, along the lines of Chris Beasley's work last year, the structural task force that he put forward that didn't really get off the ground, how does that interact with this, especially in light of maybe the ARC recommendations and looking towards those specifically? You might have mentioned some of them, but just how do those interact?
Yeah, thank you, Governor Conrad. I absolutely agree. I think it's very, very vital that we include all voices that are going to be impacted by that. And that includes Indigenous students. It includes, students from various parts of our campus. And I'm very, 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 committed to ensuring that consultation is very heavy, is very thorough. This is going to be a multi-month process. At the end of the day, the task force will be doing a comprehensive review of all elements of the governance structure as a whole. So that includes, conversations that have happened last year on council. That includes conversations that have happened 5 years ago. There have been reports on council structure, SRA structure, things like that, and reports that will be taken into account, as well as, taken into the creation of a new report to really look at this. I will also say that we're working very closely with EDIT. One of the things that, I hear a lot about when we talk about consultation is that you usually hear about it right at the end of the process. No, I think consultation begins right at the front. You have to include the voices throughout the process, and it's an ongoing iterative process. So I hope that answers your question, but that is a very good point, and I am very committed to that.
Excellent. Thank you, Councilor. Sorry, thank you, President Agarwal. I'll look to Councilor Dixon.
Hello. Thank you for clarifying. You probably also mentioned this, and I'm just like not computing, but like speaking about consultation, has there, and I know this is like early stages, already been thought into like working with groups who might have more specific knowledge from outside of the university? Like, I don't know what an example of that would be, but for example, if we're looking to do more of like a decolonized structure or make sure that we have more like diverse representation, like kind of institutionalized in different ways, is there different groups that you guys have already thought about looking at to kind of like partner with and get like influence on? Because we are at the end of the day only students with like limited knowledge and capacity and all that.
Yeah, thanks for the question, Councillor Dixon. You know, you raise a really interesting point. I think when we talk about consultation, like what does that actually really look like, and what does it mean for an organization that at the end of the day is really you know, run by students for students? I think what, you know, a lot of these discussions of course will happen on this working group. It will be a very I'll preface this by saying that this working group will be no small commitment. So it will be meeting most likely weekly. It'll be a pretty heavy commitment. And if the task force feels it necessary, and I we have been thinking about that actually, in terms of like bringing in potential people as guests into the consultation process, maybe even looking at potentially outside of the U of A community. I think it is important to represent, you know, the students that are on campus, because then it could kind of really balloon, but that's not off the table at all. It's really at the end of the day, up to the task force. So I can certainly keep that as a thought when we do get that set up and running. But yeah, no, I appreciate the question, Councillor Dixon. I hope that answered it.
Excellent. Thank you, President Agarwal. So that will exhaust our time. Thankfully, the speakers list is exhausted as well. But with that, we've got about 25 minutes here before the break, so we're looking to go into executive committee reports. But with that being said, if we could get, actually here, we'll just go in order because I know it now. Vice President Draper.
Hey, sorry about that. I had my camera off earlier because I've been having a bit of a problem with my eyes, so I was just kind of doing some hot compress, but I took some Advil and I'm better now, so I should be able to be looking actively at y'all for the rest of this meeting. In terms of my executive report, I actually did something a little bit different this time. If you read my report, you'll see that contrary to the typical just like outlining my majority of my projects, this week, I did a bit more of a brief outline and then a deep dive into a specific project that I'm working on. So I'd love to see if that's something that y'all enjoyed, something that you want to see more of going forward, and how I can make my report the best going forward for all of y'all. In other words and other news and other things going on, one fun thing that's happening tomorrow is it's actually a very cool holiday that I am quite fond of. It is actually World Bisexuality Awareness Day. So anybody in the queer community or outside the queer community or just who exists, be sure to celebrate that. That's a fun day. It's a really important one too, because oftentimes bisexual identities are often devalidated or seen as less valid due to just a lot of misinformation about like what it means or what it's like or what it is. So that's just the fun day going on there. Other things going on right now, GFC is happening and the by-election is happening. The GFC by-election this week is in full swing. We actually have two contested GFC seats, the Faculty of Nursing and the Faculty of Science both have their seats contested, which is fantastic to see so much interest going on. And there's a lot of hopefully new seats coming forward after that. So there's a lot of great things going on. If you have any questions about what I'm doing, where I'm doing it, how I'm doing it, or just like what's going on, just never hesitate to email me. I'm always looking forward to chat and looking forward to talk. So happy, I guess, Bisexuality Awareness Day Eve, happy council, and looking forward to the rest of this agenda.
Excellent. Thank you, Vice President Draper. I'll look to Vice President Lay.
Hello, Council. I hope you're all enjoying our lovely fall so far. So it's been a reasonably productive last few weeks. I'll just give you some updates on the biggest items that I'm working on right now. So one of the big projects I'm working on right now is the University VP External Relations Search Committee. So as many of you might have heard, the university created a new executive position recently by consolidating some existing positions. They've created a new position called the VP External Relations, which is basically my job, but for the whole university, and their job will be to handle government relations, community relations, fundraising, other things like that. So there's a search committee that I am participating in. We are moving along the process, and I'm looking forward to being able to choose the successful candidate. I put the job posting link in my report. So if you're interested in seeing the job posting and learning more about what this person is going to be doing and what kind of person will take this job, check out my written report for that. Next, we are meeting with a bunch of MLAs in the next few weeks while the legislature is not sitting. So in the last 2 days, myself and President Agarwal have met with MLAs Thomas Dang, Raki Pancholi, and John Carson, all from Edmonton. And later in the week, we're going to be meeting with MLAs Janice Irwin, Laurie Sigurdsson, Marlon Schmidt, and I believe that's it for this week. The week after that, I will be on vacation, and I will not be answering work emails or chats unless they are extremely urgent. But the week after that, we're going to be back to it and continuing to meet with as many MLAs as possible to show them the student perspective. And a quick update on the Alberta 2030 post-secondary review. I've been participating in the round tables with the consultant and other stakeholders. We have one round table left and are about halfway through the process. We expect in the next few weeks to start seeing opportunities for more broad-based public consultation, including town halls and surveys. We'll make sure that you know about that and have the opportunity to be included when the time comes. And we will make sure to do everything we can to ensure that average students can get their perspectives heard too. Happy to take any questions and have a great week.
Excellent. Thank you, Vice President Lay. I'll look to Vice President Crum.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Hello, everyone. Nice to be seeing you again. So in terms of some quick updates, we had an executive retreat, and retreat always sounds more tropical than I think it usually is. We had muffins and coffee and talked about academic restructuring, and it truly was very fun. And essentially we just covered some ideas around, you know, what you saw President Agarwal just tell to you. So that was very exciting. I will also update you to say that just as Rowan is searching for his vice president external, I have found my vice president finance and administration. That is, the university has found their VP finance administration. So we've officially made a hire. We have hired. His name is Todd Gilchrist. He is an expert in change management, coming to us from AHS. And this is a very exciting thing. As I believe that he will do an excellent job in his new role. So we're very excited for that. I am very excited to tell you that we have been working, and by we, I mean myself, General Manager Mark Dumichel, our building planner whom you've met, Aaron Van Horn. We have been meeting with architects to discuss the planning of the Meyer Horowitz Theater renovation, which you approved and we have been discussing here. I can tell you it's been very exciting to see all of these plans and blueprints and to be talking about the deficiencies of the theater as it stands, ways that we can make it way more sustainable environmentally as well as socially in terms of addressing accessibility concerns. We're really looking forward to putting in a lot better wheelchair access access for those who use any kind of mobility aid, as well as for auditory access, wayfinding, things like that, making it safer, making it better for everyone so that it can be a space that is enjoyed by students and patrons of all walks of life and no matter where they're coming from. So we are very excited about that, and I will take any questions that you may have, but yeah, let me know.
Excellent, thank you, Vice President Cron. And thank you, Councillor Enerson, for that note. I was just looking back, being like, I knew I forgot one. But President Agarwal, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Speaker. So it's been incredibly long past 2 weeks. I'll say that many of us, of these executives, have been working quite a lot. Lack of sleep is a real thing right now. There's just so many things going on in this year, I think, with, you know, academic restructuring, with a lot of the COVID-related things, a lot of the budget issues, the UPass issues, the Alberta 2030 review. It's all sort of just culminating. And I just want to say that the VPs, David, Alana, Rowan, and Katie, have been working incredibly hard. So if you have something nice to say to any of us, we would gladly take any comments. Yeah, so I think one of the big things of the past couple of weeks, the last 2 weeks, I was at the presidential installation for President Bill Flanagan at the Jubilee. We were very socially distanced, but it was really incredible to install him as the new vice chancellor and president of the university. We were able to submit a students' union welcome video, as well as be on stage along with the Graduate Students Association. Much of what's been on my mind and on my plate over the past 2 weeks have been, as you heard, with academic restructuring, looking at the governance restructuring task force. VP Lay and myself met with some MLAs today and yesterday, and we have four more meetings by the end of this week. So it's going to be an incredibly busy week. We're really pushing for a lot of the big issues that you've heard us talk about quite a lot, whether it's institutional autonomy, the student experience, funding for institutions, supporting affordability, and recession response, and commuting, supporting healthy and safe campuses. We have APC tomorrow, Academic Planning Committee. I'm going to be on that, where we will be looking at the academic restructuring proposals, as well as I was part of a GFC member orientation panel yesterday, and I was happy to provide some of my thoughts on what consultation and community engagement look like. So if you're wondering about what consultation can look like and community engagement of your constituencies, please reach out. I'm always happy to talk. And if you want to talk about anything else, any feedback or any just questions, shoot me an email. I don't get emails enough. That's a joke. I get a lot of emails, but I'm happy to take emails from any counselors. Thank you very much.
Excellent. Thank you, President Agarwal. All right, we've got 15 minutes before we're scheduled to go for a break here, so we're just going to power through the board and committee reports, then we'll go for a break so that we could come back just into open forum. I know there's a lot of guests been waiting to ask questions here, so we'll start off with ARC right away.
Hi, okay, so for ARC, can you guys hear me, by the way?
Yep.
Okay, awesome. So for ARC, we didn't meet last week, but we're still working on our like navigation guide between ARC and ASC. And I also just got updated by VP Draper that we have an applicant for the student at large position for ARC, which is really awesome. And I'm so excited. I'm sorry if I took your thunder, David, but yeah, that should be really cool. So yeah, that's everything for ARC.
Excellent. Thank you, Councillor Dillon. Audit Committee?
Audit Committee is in full swing. The audits have been distributed to the members and we're all getting going with those. So hopefully we'll start approving soon.
Excellent. Sounds good. Bylaw Committee.
Hello. Bylaw is doing great. We just had a very relaxed meeting. There was nothing major on the agenda to vote on. So I thought I would take that opportunity to help just, for lack of better words, educate the committee on just the process of drafting plebiscite and referenda questions, since that's probably going to be the most of our focus for this fall semester. So I made a really nice Hamilton-themed presentation about referendums and plebiscites and the different fees that the SU collects. So feel free to check that out if you want. It's very educational, I think. And yeah, that bylaw's been fun.
Excellent. Glad to hear. CAC.
Hello, everyone. So at CAC, we worked with the CRO, and he's done a wonderful job with a video that we're planning to make on elections. And I want to thank everyone who signed up for the video. At GAC, we're currently working on the ARC recommendations, so we'll be reaching out to the different committees on how they can help GAC achieve the recommendations pertaining to GAC. That's all for GAC. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you, Councillor Bid. I'll look to the Executive Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As VP Cron mentioned earlier, the Executive Committee was on a 7-hour retreat, which VP Cron is correct in saying that it was not in a tropical location. However, in a in a room looking at a lot of big issues. So we were looking at, she mentioned, academic restructuring. We had some feedback sessions, and one of the things the Executive Committee is going to be doing is media training in the next couple of weeks. There are a lot of requests for media for a lot of the big issues that are happening. So we're excited to be doing that and representing the Students' Union and all students in the most efficient and the most appropriate manner. So it's a very busy time of the year, but it's always exciting work.
Excellent. Thank you, President Agarwal. I'll look to Finance Committee.
Hello. Finance Committee has not met yet for the fall semester because, first of all, not many agenda items, though some are coming, and I dropped the ball on finding us a fall meeting time. So my apologies, but we'll update you later.
All right. NOBCOM.
Hello. You did not steal my thunder, Simran. I consider that to be, I guess, you were the lightning, then I'm the thunder, because I take like a solid 5-10 minutes later. Simran did give the whole announcement. We have received applications for that. So although NOMCOM has not met since our last meeting, we will be meeting again soon to adjudicate that application. And I believe that would be the end of our like main load of council appointments. So after that, it's mostly, I believe, just left to when faculty associations elect GFC representatives, if there are vacancies in their faculty, that NOMCOM will be appointing. So that's going to be our major project for the rest of the year. And looking after this by-election, it looks like there's only going to be a few seats left. So I'm really happy to see such an engaged student body this year, both across the nominating pool for all of our committees, as well as across GFC.
Excellent. Thank you, Vice President Draper. Policy Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Policy Committee met last Tuesday. We had a very exciting meeting. We did sort of a workshop spearheaded by VPLA. So thank you, VPLA, for doing that. It was on drafting policy in a different format than what we typically do. In order to give the committee a different perspective when they're drafting policy, as well as see if there's a more effective way for us to, you know, inform our constituents and the other people that are or that we're held accountable to, as well as we're continuing our work on the health and wellness policy, nonpartisan deferred maintenance, and student employment.
Excellent. Thank you, Councillor Montero. Sustainability Committee.
Hello. We have met twice since our last last council meeting. However, both times we did not meet quorum. So we're really trying to figure out kind of how we can solve this problem. We have created our topics for research, and we have divided them up among our members who are now going to start kind of doing research into these different topics so we can start making our recommendations. Thanks.
Excellent. Thank you, Councillor Dixon. I look to the Student Groups Committee. I know that
I can report on behalf of VP Kidd. VP Kidd is the chair of the Student Group Committee, but we have not met as there have been no complaints that need to go to Student Group Committee.
We'll take that as a good thing. Translation Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Translation Committee hasn't met since last meeting. I just wanted to thank all the councillors that passed the motions that Anna and I put forward. It's incredibly helpful and will definitely, you know, benefit towards getting people involved with the committee. On Friday, Anna and I are meeting to put together some information to be able to start recruiting students for it, and we should have some more information by the next student council meeting. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you, Councillor Enerson. Actually, we're making record time going through this, but last but certainly not least, Governor Conrad.
Hello. I guess first thing would be from the board, met with the Reputation and Public Affairs Committee. Some of the open items were Indigenous students receiving $2.9 million in funding for education. There was also a very cognizant reality that we need to improve our relationship with the Albertan government, through better marketing of our reports, our rewards, other achievements that U Alberta puts forward. We also talked about Bill's transition in presidency, right, Bill Flanagan. He's meeting lots of internal and external stakeholders, meeting with different student groups, including GSA and UASU. He also met with the Black Student Association, which was a very, very valuable conversation for him. Just in terms of, I'll first go to the University of Ottawa supporting CSJ. Some of you may have seen the Edmonton Journal article. Just take note that was an opinion article. Having spoken with University Administration, University of Ottawa is not looking to fund CSJ behind or in spite of U of A's choices or whatever else, right? So that's there's very explicit contact there. And so the article, although it puts forward an idea, that's not what's actually happening. Some other things too, ISA ASC representation on the Board Learning Research and Student Experience Committee. That will be going forward, gonna meet with ISA and ASC. We're going to develop a proposal with ARC as well. And we're gonna go forward to BLRSEC and see what we can do for student representation there. So those are the big things, other details in my report.
Excellent. Thank you, Board of Governors Representative Conrad. And at this time, I'd usually ask if there are any more members of council looking to make a report. I still don't exactly know where the Sustainability and Capital Fund Committee sits. Like, is this like an optional report during here for that committee, or am I to call on it on every meeting now?
I can speak to that, Mr. Speaker. That is completely up to you, I suppose, although considering it is a committee of council, as per bylaw 100, I see no reason why we shouldn't make a report unless our meetings somehow space out, but they're not at this point. Would you like me to make a very quick report?
Yeah, let's just do that, and then I'll just roll it into the regular roll call.
Perfect. Thank you. Thank you for doing that. So, Sustainability and Capital Fund Committee has not met yet in the fall semester, as I have not done that. However, as chair, I am doing some exciting work that I'm actually quite proud of in terms of a year plan. Because this is a new committee with a very big job, we obviously are kind of setting the groundwork for how this is going to be looking going forward. And so we're doing that very carefully. Again, our committee is very committed and they do love the work that they do. So that's gonna be, again, just making sure that those assessment and adjudication documents for projects are looking really good, ensuring that the committee has a very well-founded and written out understanding of sustainability and all these sorts of things. Just work like that. Happy to answer more questions on it later, but it's going well so far.
Excellent. Thank you, Vice President Cron. I promise I won't forget to call on it anymore, but I will ask that somebody from, I don't know exactly which committee, but somebody to update the standing orders for council to reflect the new composition of committees, because there's 4 or 5 missing from the standing orders now. But with that, we're coming into 7:26 p.m. Our natural break's at 7:30, but I'm going to call it now. And we'll rejoin again at 7:41 p.m. We're going to go into attendance super quickly first and then go into the break. So I'll just get onto attendance. That should take us right to 7:30. But President Agarwal.
Present.
Excellent. Vice President Draper.
Present and enjoying the life from Golden Hour.
Nice. Who's next? Vice President Lay.
Also present and enjoying the light from Golden Hour.
Nice. I get Golden Hour in like an hour. I'm behind you guys, but okay. Vice President Cron.
Present in the dark.
Nice. Vice President Kidd is still sick. Governor Conrad.
Yep, I'm here.
Perfect. Councillor Carbajal, I saw your note there. Thank you. Councillor Dixon.
Yep.
Perfect. Councillor DeGrano.
Here, wishing I was enjoying Golden Hour.
Thank you, Councilor Marquise. Councilor Marquise, are you still with us? That's okay. Councilor Oliveira?
Here.
Thank you. Councilor Veloso?
Here.
Thank you. Councilor Yabut?
Here.
Thank you. Councilor Burhani?
Here.
Thank you. Councilor Soretsky?
Present.
Thank you. Councilor Ackerman?
Present.
Excellent. Councilor Baticki?
Here.
Perfect. Councilor Bid?
Present.
Perfect. Councilor Bose?
Here.
Thank you. Councilor Hariharan? Councilor Hariharan? Councilor Montero?
Present.
Excellent. Councilor Buchanan? Councilor Buchanan? All right, Councilor Filipovich?
Present.
Perfect. Councilor Brandwine?
Present.
Excellent. Councilor Enerson?
I am here.
Perfect. Councilor Badisha?
I'm here.
Perfect. Councilor Berezesh? Councilor Dillon?
I'm here.
Councilor Fotang?
Hello.
Councilor Kamani?
Present.
Councilor Buchanan, I saw your note there as well. Thank you. Councilor Corday?
Present.
Perfect. I myself am here. Mark, are you here? All right. We're going to go for break and we'll resume back here at 7:45. So I'll catch you guys all in 15 minutes.
Thanks, Christian.
Hello?
Hello?
That's me. I can't hear you, boss.
I saw your message.
Yeah, I know. You just look so, you know, they're just loving the aesthetics. You just look so serene.
I made a quick and easy change. I moved my lamp from the side of my face to above my face.
Beautiful. The difference a good lighting makes, honestly. Yeah.
How's it going?
It's going great.
It's good.
Yeah. I'm in the dark also.
Yeah.
But I have a window here, so I could open the curtains, but
Then you got glare on your screen.
Yeah.
I don't know. Hannah, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Oh, you know, thriving. I have a mass, like, I promise I'm paying attention. I have a massive bucket of tiny apples that were given to me by someone, and I'm, like, taking out the little cores so that I can make applesauce. So it's very therapeutic to just sit here and just, like, core some apples while I just, like, listen to what's going on.
I love it.
Yeah.
Alana, that is so wholesome.
Oh, thank you. Yes.
It's your coring apples.
I love applesauce. I'm here for it.
Alana, I need to try this awake chocolate.
Awake chocolate is so good.
Small plug, they sell it at Submart.
Does it get you wired?
Yeah.
Like 100 milligrams of caffeine, I think, in each bar. So, like, yeah, decently wired.
Okay. Have you ever made hot chocolate using awake chocolate?
Stop, Nicole. No. Oh my gosh. That's like instant death.
Oh, yeah.
I'm kind of like a squirrel, honestly. Like, I can only drink one cup of coffee. Like, I need that cup of coffee, but like, that's kind of it, you know? Then I'm kind of done.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Can't really.
I've had 3 iced coffees today, but you know.
Cool.
Was it a smart idea? Absolutely not. Was it done? Yes.
And you deserved it. You
I find I get so jittery if I have more than one. I'm like, I can't.
Yeah. That's how I am too.
I might have to try that awake though. I've never had it before. Does it actually like wake you up?
Yeah. It's like eating chocolate and getting coffee. It's great. And like, it's actually like nice tasting chocolate too. Like it's somewhere between a cheap chocolate bar and a fancy chocolate bar in terms of its like quality, I would say. But like, it's yummy. They come with like caramel flavor or just like milk chocolate or dark chocolate.
Yeah, because sometimes I just literally don't have time to like drink a full cup of coffee. Like I just don't. So that's, I'm into that.
It's true. Also, Hannah, have you done a practicum yet at this point for your nursing?
Yeah, I did one. I'm in my third year of the program, so we did them last year. And then right now I'm at the Grey Nuns for labor and delivery.
Oh, cool. So,
yeah, that's why I was like a little bit late today because I was like driving home on the hen day and there was so much traffic. But yeah, labor and delivery is pretty wild.
I can imagine that's very intense. So I was just thinking, you know, I was imagining you probably have to do like some weird shift hours maybe, or I don't know if they only have you on day shifts. I was thinking of like the caffeine, but like, my goodness, I feel like I would have to be pretty caffeined up to like be helping somebody deliver a baby, you know, like I'd be like.
Well, yeah, normally I'm pretty good and I have to be asleep by like, honestly, like 9 o'clock because we have to be there at like 6:40.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, today was I was so sleepy today. I did not get a good sleep. So that chocolate would have been just what I needed.
That would have been it.
Dang. Yeah. Just like delivering babies. It was crazy.
That is crazy. Like,
I'm like, what's my, like what's doing my it. Life? Like,
yeah.
It was wild.
That is so wild. Are they so cute though? In bylaw committee, we like everybody has a sister who's had a baby now or something like that. And so like we just see them all the time. It just reminds me of how cute they are.
They're super cute. When they're first born, of course, some of them need a little cleaning up, little things need to be done, but they're all super cute. And then tomorrow I'm in postpartum, so that's more like where mom and baby go. Yeah. Like 12 hours after delivery, and there's more like baby time there because in labor and delivery it's kind of you're just with the mom like all day waiting for her to deliver.
So
I'm really pumped for that.
That's so exciting.
Yeah.
Wow. Oh, that's really wonderful.
Yeah, I'm really happy that we got to go to the hospital and they didn't cancel it because of COVID, because that would have sucked.
Yeah, that'd be awful. And like, how do you find it? Like, I wonder how different is labor and delivery right now, like with COVID? Like, are there a lot of extra precautions and stuff? Like, or is it pretty much just like as it always has been, do you think?
Well, they only are allowed one support person. So the mom's only allowed one person in the room. Like visitors aren't allowed. They say that she has to, or they have to wear a mask, but I'm just like, you can take it off. You're in so much pain right now. Like, it's fine.
Be allowed to not wear a mask. That's it.
Cause I'm like, you are doing such hard work. Like we screen their temperature like all the time.
Yeah.
That we do that so much. So I'm personally, when I'm helping someone, I'm like, yeah, it's fine. You don't need to be wearing your mask right now. Like, this is really hard work. So, but yeah, it's basically just that, like only one person allowed in the room, which can be really hard for some people. And like,
yeah, that's kind of sad. Hey, like what if you want like your mom and your partner there or something?
Yeah,
right?
I know. So it's tough, but yeah, I think they're trying to get people discharged to go home like a little bit sooner, just so like family can meet them within the first couple days.
Well, that's good. Yeah.
Yeah. But other than that, we're just wearing masks like literally at all times. As like students, we have to do a bunch of like stuff. We have to like sign a bunch of forms like multiple times a shift saying like I don't have symptoms. Like I feel like I'm signing my life away. Like I've signed so many things.
Have COVID.
Yeah.
5 hours later, trust me.
Yeah.
Have it. That's funny. Oh.
Yeah, hopefully things stay under control. And because I know like the second year nursing students, their clinicals are like virtual, like online.
Oh, really?
That sounds, yeah.
That's really hard. You don't learn as much, hey?
No.
No. Well, I'm glad you get to do that. Thank you. I'm going to go like wash my hands. They're covered in apples. So.
Okay, sounds good.
I just find it so funny that like Rowan's pouring out his near-death experience on the chat right now about, it's like a heart. And Talia too, like that is not okay to have that many energy drinks in a day.
It was not great. And y'all probably think I'm exaggerating. I'm not. Like it was awful. Like I honestly felt horrible all the time. Like, it was too much, but we're over it now. I have learned from my mistakes. Yeah.
I've been trying to like wean off of coffee, but there's days where I'm just like, I just need coffee. My friend, he was trying to pull an all-nighter to write this biology paper, and he had just like this little baggie of caffeine pills, and it looked so sketchy, and he offered me one, and I tried it, and I had like this, I think I had like the first 2 hours I just like was writing like crazy, and I got so much down, and then I crashed so hard and I ended up sleeping in a computer lab in CSIS all night.
And Joel, are you sure there are caffeine pills?
I don't know. I'm starting to second guess now. Like, what if it was something else that I just didn't know?
I find that so funny. Like, they're very suspicious pills, but I will take them anyway.
And then he goes on this like massive hyper writing experience and crashes.
Yeah, no, I honestly thought I, like, discovered something new about, like, mosses, because it was just the biology of bryophytes, and I honestly thought I, like, came up with this new thing, and I was so excited, and then the next morning I read it, and I was like, what the heck is this? What did I write?
I know people snort caffeine pills.
Huh? You're taking that person.
Snorting?
Yes. Nicole, don't knock it until you try it. I'm kidding.
Oh my God.
I mean, I had friends in high school who snorted pre-workout, but.
Oh my God, Abner, that was so big in my high school too.
Yeah.
People snorted sugar back in the day, but I don't know if that's like a normal thing.
All right, everybody. Seeing as how we're coming into 7:45 here, we're going to look to resume council. So I'll call the meeting back to order here, 7:45, and we'll go into open forum. So just as a reminder to everybody, plus we do have a lot of guests, at the beginning of the meeting, I asked for all registered guests a few times to register in the chat with their name and association if they wanted to ask questions. Well, this is your time to ask questions because all members of council, or sorry, all guests of council have the ability to have a combined 3 speaking turns to ask either 30-second questions to any members of council or to make a 2-minute statement. And so with that, I will open the floor to the speakers list. Awesome. I see your first question here from Mitchell.
Hey there, hey, President Agarwal. In a panel organized by NASA and AASUA, University of Sydney staff members said that their restructuring process led to an overall decrease in student staff experience. What steps will the SU take to ensure that our restructuring process leads to different outcomes?
President Agarwal, go ahead.
Thank you for the question, Mitchell. I think one of the biggest things that I've been pushing as a student representative, particularly the undergraduate student representative on the Academic Restructuring Working Group, is really ensuring that the student experience and that feedback which students are providing, whether it's on council, whether it's outside through various other groups, is being prioritized. So I've been very diligent in bringing back feedback from council over the past few months. Just a couple of weeks ago, there was a presentation by Steve Dew, the provost, on academic restructuring, and I was able to bring a lot of those concerns to ensure that the student experience is actually maintained through this. One of the things is that there will be like specialized divisions, which will be, I think, to the benefit of students here at the U of A. We have been looking at a lot of the models across Canada, across Australia and the UK. And you do raise a really good point though. And I'm really trying to keep an eye on right now. A lot of the conversation is high level in terms of faculty, but when we do have the conversation specifically, for example, about academic advising, which is a huge student part of this, so we really want to ensure that those are not affecting students negatively. I hope that answers the question.
Excellent. I'll look for any other questions from registered guests. Mitchell, go ahead.
Hey there, thanks. I appreciate that. So the scope of academic restructuring means that almost every student will be affected on campus. Do you plan to directly consultate with the student population at large? And if so, what methods would you plan to use to do that?
President Agarwal?
Yeah, so thank you for the question. I think there's a lot of, there will be impacts. As you may have heard in the presentation, there are going to be, I think, a lot of the positive impacts, depending on which of the models are chosen at the end of the day. First off, it is very, very strong consultation. Over the past few months, there have been many town halls, which I think you've attended some of them. There have been a lot of presentations at various groups. Steve presented at council towards the GSA. I've been presenting it here today as well. I've been bringing updates throughout the past couple of months, as well as where the 3 models that have been proposed are now public as of yesterday, and we are going to be doing much thorough consultation more publicly. So we're actually engaging in a strategic communication strategy later on this week to ensure that every student has access to the knowledge and ability to understand what this is and how it would impact them and engage in the conversation. At the end of the day, I really want students to be engaged and share their comments to me so I can bring it back to the committee.
Awesome. Thank you for answering the question, President Agarwal.
Excellent. Thank you, President Agarwal. I am still waiting on a speaker's list, so just any registered guest. I mean, we do have a 15-minute time slot for open forum, but with the exhaustion of the speakers, as we can move on. Seeing Nothing. I'll look to move on to question period. So question period, as a reminder, you guys are all totally familiar, but members of council have 30 seconds to ask questions or 2 minutes to make a statement, and questions have to be asked to other members of council. But with that, I will open the speakers list. Okay, President Agarwal, you have a question?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Speaker. Apparently, I can't write my name, so I have a question for the chair of the chair of CAC. So, Councillor Bid, you mentioned in your report that you are working with the CRO to create a video for the elections. Just wanted to ask when that'll be public, and I also just wanted to commend you on your work and working with everyone involved in that. I think it's going to be great. I was part of that video. I know many of councillors and other execs were part of the video, so just wanted an update on when you think that would be available publicly.
Thank you so much. Honestly, I didn't put in a lot of work into that. The CRO himself has put in a lot of work into that, and I'm really thankful to him for that. I don't know when it will be ready, but he said that as soon as the videos have been shot, he'll be sending it to the marketing team for editing. And I will reach out to him, but it should most probably be out before the by-elections.
Excellent. Thank you, Councillor Bid. I'll look to Councillor Buchanan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for President Agarwal, and I would just like clarification on the position of the executive committee. Is it their position that there is a mandate to proceed with the Meyer Horowitz Theater without any other further action, or does it need an approval at council, or is there planning to be a referendum on the actual decision on the project being pursued?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you for the Councillor. Oh, sorry.
No need to thank me.
Sorry about that. Thank you, Councillor Buchanan. So as you may recall, a few weeks ago at Council, there was a motion to look towards planning process. That does not indicate any approval to do any building, but I will defer the rest of my speaking time to VP Cron, who can give a more holistic response to this.
Thank you, President Agarwal. So yes, essentially he got the gist of it in a sense, which is to say that what passed through Sustainability and Capital Fund Committee and what subsequently passed at Council at their recommendation is the planning of the Meyer Horowitz Theater renovation. You saw the sustainability roadmap presentation by Aaron Van Horn, our building planner, and other presentations by Mark Dumichel to indicate, you know, the importance of this project and all of these sorts of things that we already have established. And so in terms of breaking ground and going ahead with the project itself, that will be a decision made by Students' Council at a later date, again, at the possible recommendation by Sustainability and Capital Fund Committee. So it will still go through that whole process again of ensuring that it's going to meet the criteria as voted on by students at the referendum for the Sustainability and Capital Fund. And so essentially it will go through that process again to really ensure that the theater proposal itself as planned is really meeting those criteria and really giving that value that students have voted for and have asked for.
Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you, President Agarwal and Vice President Cron. I'll look to Councillor Bose.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So this is a statement towards VP Cron, President Agarwal, VP Lay, and VP Kit. This is not the easiest year to be execs, but you folks have done an amazing job so far. And yeah, I appreciate all your hard work. And yeah, again, I understand that this is not the easiest year, but you folks have done an amazing job, whether it's UPAD, ESLA 2030, academic restructuring, OBI, and our sexual violence on campus. So amazing job. I really appreciate all the efforts you folks have put in. So yeah, thank you for that.
Excellent. Thank you, Councillor Bowes. That will exhaust our speakers list, but we do have a little bit of time if you guys want to just, or if anybody wants to hop on here. Perfect. Councillor Baticki.
Sorry about that. My question is for probably President Agrawal. Due to COVID, there's many students living away from Edmonton, and moving back and finding a place to live can take a lot of time and money. And other universities have already announced what the winter semester will look like. So I was just curious if you have any idea what the U of A is leaning towards or when they'll make their decision.
President Agrawal.
Thank you for real this time, Mr. Speaker, and thanks for the question, Councillor Baticki. Yes, a lot of other institutions have already announced. I will let you all know that I think in the next few weeks, the University of Alberta will be announcing what the plan is for the winter 2021 semester, but I can tell you that it will most likely be similar to what's happening this semester to fall. So I really think that if you look at UBC, for example, they're continuing online in the way they are. So I don't imagine we will be deviating too much from the plans that other U15 institutions are doing. But it's a great question.
Excellent. Thank you, President Agrawal and Councillor Baticki. I'll look to Councillor Hariharan here.
My question is regarding the presentation which President Agrawal did. I just want to know how, with the different scenarios and the different divisions happening, how exactly would the financial budget be divided, and how will that affect the, you know, financial aid and scholarships for different students? Yeah, that's something which really concerns me.
President Agrawal, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for the question, Councillor Hariharan. I think it's really important to know that a lot of the savings that would be happening from academic restructuring, as well as administrative restructuring, would be going into the student experience, into research, into teaching, and really saving costs in those avenues. In terms of financial aid, scholarships, or things like that students can directly access, I don't know of any plans right now. Right now, as I mentioned earlier, this is very high level. This is really just looking at the faculty restructuring. But I imagine some of those conversations will come up, in which case we will be working to ensure that some of those you know, cost savings could be redirected into different avenues. But that is a really good question, and I think it's going to require fully understanding what the ramifications of this are going to be. But at this stage, it's still remaining very high level in terms of faculty. So yeah, thank you for that question.
Excellent. Thank you, President Agrawal and Councillor Hariharan. Councillor Buchanan, you had a question here?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This is a question for President Agrawal and or Vice President Cron. Thank you for your answer to my previous question. Realizing that dates are in flux in time when there's projects and of this nature, when do you estimate that the proposal would be presented to council to for the approval of the project as a whole?
President Agrawal.
Thank you for the question. I will defer that to VP Cron.
Thank you, President Agrawal, Mr. Speaker, and Councillor Buchanan. So essentially, any kind of planning and approvals have to jump through quite a few hoops. We're talking General Faculties Council, Facilities and Development Committee, other sorts of funding areas that we're looking at and things like that to really get a plan through. So there are a lot of steps involved. So you're right, there will be some variability with that. However, we are aiming for approximately, I would say, late November, early December, for a time when we would be wanting to bring this to council to be asking, you know, what council thinks of it, and ultimately, possibly, again, what depending on what SCF committee decides, a possible recommendation to council for that. And I say possible because SCF committee has the right to, you know, send things back to make them better and all these sorts of things. So that would be the approximate date, I would say, is hopefully before the end of 2020.
Thank you.
Thank you, Vice President Cron and Councilor Buchanan. So this will exhaust our speakers list, and I've been watching it dwindle, so I'll look to motion into board committee business here. So we'll start with item 7A on our agenda. Councilor Bid moves to call for nominations and appoint a councilor to become a permanent member of the Council Administration Committee, or CAC. So with that, I will just get a secondary, if I could, into the chat. Perfect. Thank you, Vice President Draper, Governor Conrad, I'm sorry. But Councillor Bid, you do have a minute here to introduce.
So at the Council Administration Committee, we have a vacancy for a permanent member. This year we're doing tangible work, so I encourage you to join the team and work with us on our goals. So I encourage you to also nominate others. Thanks.
Excellent. Okay, here. So we will run this as a call for nominations. So if you'd like to nominate somebody else, another member of council, or if you would like to nominate yourself, please enter your name into the chat. Councillor Badesha?
I'd like to nominate Councillor Dillon.
And Councillor Dillon?
I'd like to reject, if that's the right word, not accept.
Okay. Governor Conrad?
I'd like to nominate Councillor Yabut.
Councillor Yabut?
I felt that coming, but I'm going to have to decline.
All right. Councillor Oliveira?
I would like to nominate Councillor Hariharan.
And Councillor Hariharan?
I'll gladly decline. Thank you for nominating, though.
All right, Councillor Dillon?
I'd like to nominate Councillor Badesha.
Councillor Badesha?
I would have to reject that. Yes.
All right, and Councillor Badesha, you're up next here, too.
Oh, yes. I'd like to nominate Councillor Flavovich.
I'll have to respectfully decline.
All right. Councillor Agarwal.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to nominate Councillor DeGrano.
Councillor DeGrano?
I'm going to have to respectfully decline.
That's okay. President Agarwal, did I call you Councillor Agarwal there?
Yeah, but that's okay. I was...
Yeah, my bad. I apologize. Councillor Oliveira.
I'd like to nominate Councillor Carbajal.
I'll accept. Thank you.
Awesome. Perfect. Councillor Baticki.
I'd like to nominate Councillor Suretsky.
And Councillor Suretsky?
I would like to respectfully decline, but thank you for the nomination.
Councillor DeGrano?
I'd like to nominate Councillor Veloso.
And Councillor Veloso?
I accept. Thank you for the nomination.
Excellent. Councillor Dillon?
I'd like to nominate Councillor Brandwine.
And Councillor Brandwine?
Thank you so much for the nomination, but I'm going to have to respectfully decline.
So, Councillor Bid?
I'd like to nominate Councillor Bose and Councillor Montero.
All right, Councillor Bose?
Thank you for the nomination, but I have to decline. Sorry.
Councillor Montero?
Yeah, thank you for the nomination, Councillor Bid, but I'm also going to have to decline.
Okay, Governor Conrad?
I'd like to nominate Councillor Corday.
And Councillor Corday?
I would like to thank you for the nomination, Dave. I think I'd like to accept the nomination.
Perfect. Councillor Bid?
I'd like to nominate Councillor Burhani.
And Councillor Burhani?
I'd like to respectfully decline. Thank you, though.
All right. It looks like it'll exhaust our speakers list. Glad to see so many nominations come forward, though. That was kind of wild trying to keep up. I apologize if you guys got a lot of keyboard sounds behind that. But so the way we'll do this is we'll go and we'll have 1 minute speaking turns per person that accepted a nomination. So we have three accepted nominations from Councillor Carbajal, Councillor Veloso, and Councillor Corday. We'll go in the order in which they were accepted. So in a moment here, we'll start with Councillor Carbajal and go to Councillor Veloso and Councillor Corday. Each of the three of you will have 1 minute to indicate your, I guess why you want to be on the committee and convince council to vote for you. And then we'll vote in a preferential ballot. So with that, I will give the floor to Councillor Carbajal here, and I'll start counting time once you start talking.
Thank you for nominating me. And I would just want to get more involved with the student union committees, just because currently I'm not in any of those committees, and that's just because I was new when those committees were starting to get formed. But now I'd like to get more involved in that. And I do chair some administration committees in my faculty association, so I think I could bring some of that unique insight to this committee. And I think that's basically why I just bring a new, fresh insight and also to get more involvement. Thank you.
So thank you, Councillor Carbajal. We'll look to Councillor Veloso.
Hi, I'd like to be part of CAC because I've seen just with the current council so far of how much all the work that they've been doing for council, especially all of Councillor Bid's hard work. I would love to be a part of all the change they're doing this year. Thank you.
Excellent. And finally, I will look to Councillor Corday.
Hi, I think I would love to be part of the CAC. They're doing great work with the jackets. The meetings have been folded up by Councillor Bid and by other members of the CAC. I'd also like to basically help in any way possible and the improvements and become a good counselor has been good run. I think everything that I like to do, that I can be a good counselor and becoming committed as well.
Sorry, Councillor Corday, we can't hear you at all.
Yeah, that was coming through a little bit choppy.
I'm very sorry about that. Can you hear me right now?
I think it's a little bit better.
Okay, so the main reason that I want to join the CAC, in my opinion, is because Councillor Bill and the committee of the CAC has been quite active in the Students' Union, and I think they've been doing a great job as well. I'd like to be a part, basically, to contribute as much as possible of my time and my effort to them. I think to be an asset, and I honestly wish that if given a chance, I'd do myself in the CAC as well.
Excellent. Okay, so with that, I will look to put the link to vote in the chat here. And just as a reminder, please, I know that there are guests that can see this link, but you do have to sign in with your email, so only members of council can vote. And just as a point of information, on the voting form, you'll see NOTA, like N-O-T-A. It just means none of the above. Give it a few other seconds here while it tabulates responses. And Councillor Carbajal, to your question, no, you do not have to abstain. Yes, you can vote for yourself. Okay, I think all of the votes are in now. It hasn't increased in a while, and we do have 25 votes recorded. Here, just 1 second, it's kind of close. I have to do a little bit of quick math here. Okay, with the vote tabulated, congratulations to Councillor Carbajal for your appointment to the Council Administration Committee. And thank you to everybody who put their name forward. That was great to listen to. But with that, we will look to item 7B in our agenda. President Agarwal moves to appoint 2 representatives to sit on the Physical Activity and Wellness Strategic Operating Committee. With that, I will look for a secondary, if I could.
I second, Mr. Speaker.
Perfect. Thank you, Councillor Bowes. And with that, President Agarwal, you have a moment to introduce here.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Speaker. So I am looking for 2 members to be appointed to the PAW Strategic Operating Committee. Essentially, this is going to be a committee that meets a few times a year, along with the Dean of the Faculty of Physical Education and Recreation, the Vice Provost, Dean of Students, other members. The scope of the committee is essentially to provide recommendations, strategic operating, working collaboratively in good faith with constituents, advising on fiscal, operational policies related to the PAW Center, as well as other renovated areas for student programming. It's essentially up. I think the first meeting is the beginning of October. So I would look for nominations.
Mr. Speaker, could I just provide some examples? Because I've been part of this committee and I think people would like that, like what this committee does. But...
I can defer the rest of my time to Councillor Bowes.
Yeah, Councillor Bowes, you have about 15 seconds.
Okay, never mind. Bye.
Okay, that's okay. PASOC's a great time. I was on it last year too. Good crowd. But with that, we do have Vice President Draper.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I would like to nominate Councillor Montero.
And Councillor Montero?
Yeah, I will accept.
Perfect. I'm just write this down here. Councillor Buchanan.
I was going to nominate Montero as well, so I'll withdraw.
Okay. Councillor Dillon?
I'd like to nominate Councillor Badesha.
Councillor Badesha?
I will wholeheartedly accept.
Excellent. And do we have any other nominations? Councillor Bowes?
I'd like to nominate Councillor Dillon.
Councillor Dillon?
I would like to accept. Thank you, Councillor Bowes.
Half-heartedly.
Full-heartedly, with all my heart.
Excellent. This committee seems a lot more appealing. Excellent. Okay, so seeing no more calls for nominations, we'll look to bring it... Oh, Vice President Draper, snuck one in there.
Sorry, I thought I'd put it in... A little earlier because you just hadn't seen it. I would also like to nominate Councillor DeGrano.
Councillor DeGrano?
I'm going to have to respectfully decline. Thank you, though.
Excellent. All right. I think this will exhaust us finally. David, are you sneakishly trying to hit an enter key here? Nope. Perfect. Okay. So we'll go to look into the 1 minute speeches. We saw how it worked last time. It's going to work the exact same time here. We'll start with Councillor Montero, go to Councillor Badesha, and finish with Councillor Dunn. Councillor Montero, the floor is yours.
Perfect. Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you for the nomination. I've been in the faculty of KSR as an undergrad student. That's where I'm taking my degree for about 5 years now. In the time I've been there, I've been completely immersed in the culture of KSR, spent a lot of time in many of the buildings, been a part of a lot of programs that are there, and I've had a lot of students, you know, tell me about different concerns that they have with the way buildings are and certain things that they have issues with. And I think being on this committee gives me both a unique insight, having the opportunity to work with all of you and hear your opinions on certain things that are going on, as well as be immersed in my constituents who are constantly every single day being in the buildings, being in the PAW Center, and be able to bring those ideas together and give some valuable input to this committee. So thank you.
Excellent. Thank you, Councilor Montero. Look to Councilor Badesha.
Yes, thank you for this nomination, Councilor Dillon. So as a fifth year student, I've been around campus quite a bit, and I may not look it, but I do love to use that PAW Center. I do like working out. And for the past 5 years, I've had the unique experience of being able to like get intimate with these facilities, see the issues, and then becoming familiar with the staff and stuff. So it's just like, seems like a cool committee, talk to a lot of people. Sounds very interesting, and I'd love to help out the students. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Badesha. Councillor Dillon.
Okay, hi everyone. I first want to thank Councillor Badesha for nominating me, but also for all of you guys for considering me for this as well. So for physical health and wellness and this PAW committee in general, I'm very passionate about what that holds for a lot of our students. I know with COVID-19, there's been a lot of changes, and I've heard that on and on again by many students who've reached out to me, and I wanna be able to be there, represent their views, and advocate for their needs as well. I think that it's important to take in a diverse range of perspectives in this matter, and being really present on campus and being part of a lot of interdisciplinary groups on campus, I think I'd be able to advocate and represent these voices on this committee, as it is very fundamental now considering all the changes that are happening. But yeah, I'm super excited to even be considered for this, and I really hope you choose me. But thank you, everyone.
Excellent. Thank you, Councillor Dunn. And while y'all were making the speeches, or while y'all were giving speeches, I prepped a form. So we are ready to go there. That should be the right form. Please yell at me if it's not. I'm in a good mood tonight. I think it's been different than other meetings.
I'm glad you're having a good time, Mr. Speaker.
I would also like to speak in favor of you having a good time.
Probably because he's an hour behind. And
yeah, so I was gonna say, like, I put in a good 8 hours at work this morning and came right, like, I left work a little bit early to get home in time for council, but it's been great. I got to eat at the break. Okay, I'm just waiting for a couple more votes to come in. We had 25 on the last one. Oh, 25 on this one here now. With that being said, congratulations to Councillor Montero for your appointment. Or are we going for one or two councillors to PAWSOC?
There should be two, Mr. Speaker.
Yes, you are right. Okay, I will quickly. Okay, so Councillor Montero is definitely one. And Councillor Badesha would be the math on the other one. So congratulations to the two of you. And I'll just make a note of that in here before we move on to the next item. Ooh, this wasn't wanted. All right. So that'll bring us to our final item on today's agenda. But item 7C, President Agarwal moves to recognize the International Students Association as a student representative association under bylaw 8100. With that, before I allow you to introduce, I will ask for a secondary to the motion.
Point of information, Mr. Speaker.
Sure.
Can I amend the motion?
Sure.
Just a semantics, can I amend it to say that Agarwal moves to recognize the Undergraduate Council of the International Students Association? So addition of the Undergraduate Council of the International Students Association as a SRA.
Okay. I'm just going to type this out in the chat. The Undergraduate Council of the ISA?
Yes. And everything else stays the same.
Okay. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct, Mr. Speaker.
Excellent. I'll give you a minute to introduce here.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So I just want to, so I'm moving to, as you see the motion on the floor, you've all heard the presentation from the ISA a couple times on council. This has been a long process over the past couple of months, a lot of feedback, a lot of consultation. And I want to remind everyone that the discussion that happens today should be prefaced with a discussion of respect and empathy. I know there's a lot of thoughts and opinions around this, but I want to say that we should all be remembering that as we approach this discussion. So the approval on the floor today is to essentially move to allow the International Students Association to become a student representative association under bylaw 81, which would maintain that status and would allow would essentially, one of the things is they would, the ISA would be bound to SU political policy. It would be similar to the Aboriginal Students Council. So with that, I look for a healthy conversation.
Excellent. Thank you, President Agarwal. So with this, I will open the speakers list for anybody who would like to speak. Councillor Badesha.
Hey, Joy, before I start here, I was just wondering, is there like a time limit for this comment or?
I mean, we're technically in debate, which means you have 4 minutes.
Okay. Okay, cool. I'll just get started then. So for debate on this, I just have, just to start off here, I don't support the ISA becoming an SRA, and I think that's for three different reasons. So just to get started here, the first reason I had and is the convoluted system of governance that they've had. It's overly complicated, and I just don't see how this will actually work. Like physically, it looks good, and their inspirational leaders right now make it sound fantastic, and the consultations we've done right now, it makes it seem like it'll work. But just with systems of governments, especially on the SRA level, like what I've come to notice is that the simpler, the better. When it gets more complicated like this, things just don't tend to work out. And that's going to tie into my second point where we should remember that, like, as an organization, the ISA hasn't actually consistently run for a lot of years. They've been on and off due to membership support and other reasons. So I think it's great right now that, like, they have passionate leaders and that they have people who want to push to be an SRA, but if we're going to actually vote to like delegate our authority, we need to give it to an institution that will actually be consistently an institution. Like, we can't ever have it be like that one year the ISA just doesn't start up again. And I'm not saying that they won't, you know, the passionate leaders of them right now seem like they'll really push to, but I think it's our role to think about not just like this year and the consultations we've done this year, but also like on a 2 year, a 5 year, like a 20 year span of this UASU. So I just don't know how it'll be filled, because in the past it hasn't been. So like, as a recommendation, I think it wouldn't be great to push this right now. Like maybe this would be an issue for in a year or two, where this has consistently been an ISA and like they haven't had to shut down for these reasons. Third thing I have that like has been brought up in a few of their consultations is right now they're not asking for international student money, and that's for sure. And then they've had like light comments that have been like, in the future we might, or in some time we might just charge international students some fee to represent them. So I think this is like my biggest concern, because I think that there's one ubiquitous issue that all international students can agree on, is that they pay too much. And it's not even, you know, they can make sense of paying to the institution of the U of A, but they hate it when they pay to UASU. So because it's just like a student service. So even now, if it's like soft-hearted comments of, yeah, maybe we'll do it 1 year, eventually it'll turn into comments of something like, it will happen eventually. They will pay. And as someone who currently represents international students of my faculty, I cannot ethically vote to make something an SRA when one day it'll start charging them money. And one day they might not even exist for a year. Or that one day that they think that they can represent international students better than we can. Right now, UASU, which is the biggest representative association for students at the U of A, could not do anything to stop an increase in tuition for international students. So if this huge effective body that we are all a part of couldn't do something to stop the biggest issue that international students have, why would starting another SRA and making them pay more fees and making them go through more governance solve these issues? I just don't see it. And I would love to see like some explanation as to why, but okay, we just need to think long-term here. It sounds great right now. The leaders are passionate. Things are rolling, but we need to stop and actually think, like, is it worth it? Will they represent them better? Possibly, but not to the scale that would we need to delegate our authority to them. As it stands, if the ISA wants to be a group and an organization as they have existed, come and go as they please, and charge no money, that's completely fine, because we can use them for consultation and they can continue to do their power. But if we make them an SRA, it delegates our authority, and that's just not something that needs to be done. So I will be voting no to this. And honestly, like a lot of times things get pushed through in council because they seem good. They seem good right now. You know, maybe you haven't researched as much and it's okay. But I really urge you to just stop and think, like if you do not 100% like know all the issues and you've not 100% thought this through, please do not vote yes right now. Do not push this through, because this will have long-standing repercussions. If you vote no right now, they can come back in a year and propose it again, or they can come back in 2 years when they actually show us they can do all these things and they can come back. But if we vote yes right now, it's a lot harder for us to go back on that power, right? So I will be voting no, and I really hope that a majority of you will vote no alongside me. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you, Councillor Badesha. I will look to Councillor Enerson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Personally, what I wanted to say about my opinion in regards to this motion, I think that the ISA has done good work. Frankly, I think that they've put an effort, they've shown, you know, demonstrated effort towards this. And I definitely think that, you know, large structure, well, it may be convoluted, I think it also lends to the idea of keeping involved people year to year. I can speak from whether it's groups within school or outside of school, when you've got a dedicated core group of people of maybe five or so, the chances of, you know, everyone disappearing the next year, you know, whether that be going to a different faculty, moving, whatever it may be, ends up leaving a huge gap, and it's really difficult to recover from. When you have a larger group, albeit that it might get more convoluted, the opportunity for new people to get involved, as well as for continuing leadership, I think is really great. I had my reservations about that, because I was worried about them being able to draw in that number of people. At the same time, though, I realized that, you know, if they're able to do it now, they're proving consistently that they're able to draw people in so far, I don't see why I would stand against them being able to against their membership numbers like that. I don't think that's my place. At the same time, on top of that, I also think that, you know, we're not making a decision for 100 years. Like we're not guaranteeing that, you know, our power is completely gone. We have the opportunity that if a mistake is made, we can consult on it, deal with that as we go. And, you know, worst case scenario, if it does end up coming to it, withdraw that power. I know it's not convenient, but that's within our ability as student council. That's within our I believe our responsibility is making sure that the best suited people are doing the work that matters. I think that, you know, the ISA has the best possible voice when it comes to international students. Being led by international students, fighting for international student issues, it makes sense to me. As for, you know, drawing in money from the students, once again, that comes to student council. We have a voice in that. If we think that, you know, it's not being executed properly or not being, or it's being mismanaged, we have the opportunity to create change. It's not like we're, you know, just sitting on our hands and letting things go by. We have the opportunity to be involved in these decisions and make sure that things are running right for students. But I think personally, you know, lending this power to them, I think is a bonus to students, especially international students. That's my opinion personally. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you, Councillor Enerson. I will look to Councillor Oliveira.
So I'm an international student, as most of you know. And I have been thinking about this issue of ISA becoming an SRA since it first came up in council. And I really think that if ISA becomes an SRA, they will definitely have a better voice to support and empower international students, because it's a group led primarily of international students. So I would think it would be important for ISA to become an SRA, but I do have a lot of reservations when it comes to the governing structure, right? As it's been said before, it's very convoluted. And I am not comfortable with the exec body not being elected by directly international students. I think they should be held accountable to students, and they should be elected by students. So that's where my reservation lies. But I know that there are international students that are counselors who have spoken in favor of ISA becoming an SRA. And I would like to hear from them and see what they think of this. Because although I do want ISA to become an SRA, I want to be sure that they are representing all of international students' voices and not of like a bubble of student governance that's composed of international. Yeah.
Excellent. Thank you, Councillor Oliveira. I'll look to Councillor Dixon here.
Thanks, Jared. And thank you, everybody, so far for your thoughts. I think that I am extremely conflicted on this entire scenario, which I know I have shared with many of my fellow councillors. Similar to Councillor Oliveira, I've been thinking about this pretty much every single day since it was first brought to bylaw committee months ago. It feels like forever ago. And I feel like, I know that I echo the same concerns surrounding their governance structure and how convoluted it is and the longevity of that system. Because as we brought up during the first bylaw meeting, it is so complicated and requires so many people, and also in some ways does limit the ability for democratic elections. And while some of those issues have been addressed, and I like to thank ISA for all of their very hard work on this and meeting with us each individually, there has also been the flip side of when concerns have been brought up by councillors who are entrusted to delegate this power of it being kind of not taken in good faith and not spoken about kindly. And I've seen this a lot within different meetings where there seems like there's contention when I don't think that there needs to be. This isn't something we should be arguing over or anybody should be upset or offended by, particularly if counselors whose job it is to question this proposal are sharing their grievances, whether that be about representing refugee students better, whether that be about the structure of the system, all of that is extremely valid and is something that we have in our purview. And so for me, I am extremely conflicted because of funding, because of structure, as well as because so far the response to suggested changes, this hasn't happened to me personally, but to some other counselors, has been quite hostile. And that makes me very concerned about the future because I want to be able to work with ISA moving forward. And I don't want that to be a concern moving forward. And I think that that's fair. So I'm still on the fence after months, which I don't think bodes well for this proposal. And so I would love to hear from more international students counselors, as Anna said, because I'm not an international student. And even though this is within my purview to make this decision, what's best for international students, I would like to hear from them because at the end of the day, I do think an SRA is extremely valuable, but I still at this point in time am not 100% convinced. I don't know if I just repeated everything that was said beforehand, but I just wanted to draw attention specifically to points about communication and hostility, because I think that it's been honestly shocking that that's even been a thing. Anyway, that's all. Thanks.
Perfect. Thank you, Councillor Dixon. We are coming into like the 15-minute period of this conversation. So just for like standing orders purposes, I'll just look to extend this by 30 minutes. And if I could get two names, perfect. Oh, you guys are on the ball. Vice President Lay, thank you. Councillor Buchanan, thank you for the secondary. So we'll be extending this item until 9:07 p.m. And Councillor DeGrano, you are up to bat.
I'm just going to echo and emphasize a few previous sentiments. I've truly been thinking of this issue for a while, and I've been considering every single point that has been presented to us at council meetings, bylaw meetings, and even during the town hall held by the ISA. I truly believe international students deserve an SRA. I truly believe that international students deserve to have their voices heard and taken seriously. However, I also truly believe that international students deserve a fully democratic process that encourages and empowers them to wield their voices. I'm not confident that a model in which they cannot directly vote for their executives reflects that. I want international students to have an SRA that fully and wholly represents their wants and their needs, that they can hold them accountable as well. And for that reason, I don't know if I can support this.
Excellent. Thank you, Councillor DeGrano. I will look to Councillor Veloso.
Hi, I'd like to first start off by stating that I believe that the ISA is an amazing and crucial organization that works to represent a very important group of students on campus. But similar to Councillor DeGrano, I have been contemplating over my vote for the past couple of weeks. While I do believe the international students deserve an SRA, they deserve one that wields a fully democratic governance model that works to wholeheartedly represent them. Although I believe they can do so in the future, as a fairly new association in this current form as it is, that is still developing, gaining experience, and experimenting on how they can effectively govern while taking into consideration counselor suggestions and just like overall their constituents, I do not think now is the right time for them to, for the ISA to be passed as an SRA.
Excellent. I will look to Councillor Fotang.
Oh, I'll try to fix my camera there. Okay, perfect. I want to first begin by thanking the president of the ISA, Chanpreet Singh, for working hard on this model and, you know, starting this discussion. And I'm working towards ISA being an SRA, but I am reluctant to vote for this motion for a couple of reasons. Most of them have been echoed already by Councillor Badesha and Councillor to Grano. But my first apprehension to voting for this motion is that, and you mentioned in the chat that we don't elect our prime ministers, but the council is not the executive board. You look at the roles that the executive do, they're the ones talking to the media, they're the ones directing policy or moving on the policy that the council bring up, but they're two different entities. And if I'm a member of your organization, and let's say you're planning on charging DFUs in the future, and I'm a member of your organization, and I don't get a direct say in who are my execs are, I'd be pissed. If I don't get a say who is the VP outside of the SU or the president, I'd be pissed. So I don't see why that shouldn't, why ISA students or international students don't get the same representation for the executives. The second thing I'm worried about in this proposal is that bylaw 8100 brings up the fact that should an SRA deviate from SU political policy, direct processes have to take place. One of those processes is that, well, you come to council can vote on whether you're allowed to do that. If there's disagreement, you bring it to a plebiscite or referendum. But an issue I have with this current model is that if it goes to the council and the council, ISA council doesn't agree with it, you take it to the graduate council, because the ISA as an organization deals with both councils. You're moving on a political policy that, let's say, is for the Graduate Students Association. But that's a loophole in the bylaw that I'm very worried about, and I believe this current model doesn't address. And so those are my two issues right now. And if you can shed some light about this, because you have been given alternatives for these issues and you've just not listened. So I'm curious as to what you have to say about this.
Excellent. Thank you, Councillor Poteng. I'll look to Councillor Bid.
Hello, everyone. I appreciate the views that are coming in. I would like to clarify that for an organization to be an SRA, it states in the bylaw that the organization should act as the official representative of its membership on student issues. The ISA already does that. It works hard on ensuring that international students' needs and voices are heard. B, it states that provides services which are beneficial to its membership. So the ISA has already, when the pandemic began, when some residences were closed and international students had to move to other residences, the International Students Association organized services for international students so that they can relocate to other areas despite the racism these international students were facing, especially Asian students during the pandemic. They weren't allowed to use certain drivers wouldn't allow them to access their cars. But the International Students Association spoke with the Residents Association, and they were able to organize something. So that benefited international students. Two, during the UPass agreement, our SU VP Kran, VP Lay really worked hard on UPass, but international students were left out, and ISA stepped up and they spoke with our executive committee. They spoke with ETS, and they represented international students. As Councillor Einarsson said, international students will be able to better fight for their rights. They will be better able to represent their own views. And so it checks that point on the bylaw, provide services which are beneficial to its membership. C, foster student engagement and a sense of community within its constituency. If you look at the Instagram following of ISA, it has grown a lot in the past few years. Many international students are following it. It's because ISA is holding services and it's organizing events for international students. They have planned orientation events for international students. They have created a welcome booklet. All that takes hard work and it requires focus. And it takes a special organization to do that, which sole purpose is to represent international students. And therefore, I believe that the ISA should become an SRA. Now, coming to the point of the governance structure being convoluted and confusing, there are two reasons why this might happen. Sometimes we find things to be confusing because we're not well versed with it. For example, if you take a math problem, if you might find it confusing at first, but when you think about it, you see how things are going, you start getting it. So that's one reason why we might be finding it confusing. The second reason why we find it confusing is because it may not look simple at the first sight, but if you think about how that process came about with all the complexities that were there, if you think about it, it's not so confusing. For example, the ISA came up with a structure. It came to the SU and there were concerns, so they had to go back. And the SU told ISA that it cannot have graduate students in ISA. So the SRA cannot have graduate students. That's the reason why ISA had to go back and form an undergraduate council and a graduate council, because there are over 9,000 plus international students in U of A. The ISA cannot leave out just the graduate students, because altogether makes a better voice. Has ISA, together with international students from the undergraduate section and the graduate section, gives a much stronger voice. And the ISA cannot simply say that because we want to become an SRA, we're going to let go of the graduate side of our body, our constituency. That's why they have the undergraduate council and the graduate council. There were concerns that the elections are not happening in a free and democratic manner. I just want to clarify how the elections are happening. Every councillor that will be on the ISA, in the whole of ISA, every single councillor is voted by the student. Out of that, so there'll be undergraduate councillors and graduate councillors. Now, out of those councillors, that's where they will be electing their board members. The reason why board members aren't elected directly by students, that's because undergraduate students, there are about 6,000 undergraduate students and 3,000 international graduate students. That voice, that imbalance would cause graduate students to be, international graduate students to be disadvantaged. That's the reason why they have undergraduate counselors and graduate counselors who will vote for the board members. And there are specified seats for each of the councils. So because I'm well versed with the council, I've been looking at it, I don't find it confusing, but I agree you might be finding it confusing because you haven't had the chance to review it or to understand how exactly it works. So that's the reason why you might be finding it confusing. And to further on the point, as an international student myself, I know that other international students also want the ISA to become an SRA. And for the first time in all the meetings I have attended, the participants in this meeting were so many, and that was mostly international students. That really shows the engagement and interest they have and the support they have for ISA. So there were some comments made about ISA not being as engaged, or they might stop working in the future. It's not sustainable. Just because in the past it had stopped working, I don't think we should hinder the progress of ISA right now. I don't think we should not give them the right to become an SRA. And the reason why ISA did stop working was because when it was initially formed, it was formed by students who were graduating, who are done with their studies. So when they left, there was no transition for new leaders to take up their positions. But if you look at the composition of ISA this time, there are new counselors like myself, international counselors who are just starting our degrees. And there are also experienced counselors, people in their master's degree, providing that valued experience. And that will allow ISA to continue for a long time, because leaders will keep coming up, and this time it will not stop and get down. Moreover, it has a proper structure. They have their bylaws laid down. They have their constitution laid down. So I feel that they have covered every part. They have done their best so that they can become an SRA. And if we vote against this proposal today, I feel that we will be disadvantaging the 9,000 students that International Students Association represents. And if we don't allow ISA to become an SRA, we will be hindering the progress of international students in our community. So I urge you all to vote for this process. Another point I wanted to bring out was about the DFU, the dedicated fee unit. Yes, the ISA might be looking to charge an international student's fee, which might allow them to provide their services. But again, for that, they need to come to the SU and ask us to vote on that. So if we pass it, that's the only time they can charge the fee to students, international students. Otherwise, they cannot charge that fee to international students. They need to come to, they need to have a referendum. So we still have that right to deny them. But today's motion is to allow ISA to become an SRA. It's nothing else. And if we don't vote for it, don't vote in favor of this, I think we will not be doing justice to international students, because till date, the ISA has stood by international students. They're working hard day and night. They're putting many hours of work into this, and we cannot simply fail this motion just because ISA had stopped working in between, just because we are not well versed with the council model.
Oh, unfortunately,
we don't understand it. Thank you very much, everyone.
Thank you, Councillor Bid. Awesome. Councillor Carbajal.
Thank you. So I do want to acknowledge that the ISA, although it took some back and forth and some discussions, they were very open to discussing the whole refugee issue, even though it, again, it did go through some kind of process and it took some time and multiple concerns by multiple people. They did take that in consideration, and they do have that committee running. So I do appreciate that, because I know many other organizations may not have been that open to consulting and to just overall hearing those concerns. So while there is some issues with the governance structure and how it like would operate and the fees and such as Badesha and all other counselors have brought forward, I think this is not a yes or no issue, because I feel like it's very, if it gets passed, then it's over. If it doesn't get passed, then it's also over. But I think we can look more at it as a fluid issue, because again, governance is more about, it's constantly changing. So I think we need to talk more about the more consultation rather than it's game over for in either scenario. And I think that they have done a lot of consultation, and I do want to thank again the ISA, because I did meet with them after I raised my concerns with refugees and they cleared everything up. So I think if they just kept doing that, a lot more progress would be done. Again, there needs to be more consulting, because even though there's in months of consultation representing so many students, you need to do more and more and more. And that's not a bad thing. Again, you do want to represent the best for your students. So again, I don't think this is a yes or no issue. I think it just needs to keep working on, because I do think the ISA should have that voice for international students, but at the same time, it should, I'm sorry. While they should represent these students, I think they should also have more of their input. And they have done a lot of their input, but I think there needs to be more. And again, that can happen as an SRA and not an SRA. I'm not saying that needs to happen as either or. I'm just saying it's consultation always needs to happen actively. So I'm just, I guess my point is, when considering how you're going to vote, just considering how the advocacy and consultation is always active and it needs to keep going regardless of what the vote is. And yeah, I think that's it for me. Thank you. And yeah.
Excellent. Thank you, Councillor Carbajal. I'll look to Councillor Bose.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Oh my God, where should I start? Okay, first of all, this is 2020. So my first, I joined, like, I came into this university in 2017. During all these years, I haven't seen any organization which has put forward, which has done so much work for international students as ISA did. I hear a lot of concerns. This model is not gonna work. What if they charge this? I'm gonna come to all of those, but I would just like to say, like, now all of you, like a lot of you are pointing out on the problems, but when there was literally no ISA, none of you came forward or helped out or even initiated a process saying, okay, international students don't have any representation, let's help them building one. So that's my first thing. It's really easy to point out the problems, but it's really hard to kind of build something from the ground. So yeah, like just talking about international student concerns during the election season when you need votes that's not just a good thing. You also need to work for that throughout the year, which ISA did. Okay, putting that conversation aside, ISA, literally the council structure, if I talk about it, it represents from each and every faculty, from each and every, in my understanding, ethnicity groups on campus and also different countries. So there's so many representation within the council that it kind of actually represents the international student bus. And on the whole, and after the refugee thing as well, like I can hear a lot of concerns that they don't hear things properly or their response, but they have been pretty receptive towards the whole refugee thing, and they did set up a committee. So I don't know how they have been not acceptable of other people's ideas. And secondly, there was literally no ISA up until now. I know this whole proposal might not be perfect, but if we stop it now, and if we lose this group who has been working so hard for the betterment of international students, we might not have an ISA or like anybody which will be representing the international students. Because here's the thing, this is my third year within SU. I have not seen SU or any other group or any other counselors to kind of help and help build any representation for international students. Like, yeah, all of them have talked about international students during the elections, but not during the year, or didn't actually do anything. Now I heard some other comments regarding that since UASU, such a big student body, couldn't do anything regarding decreasing the international student fees, how could ISA do it? So my counter question would be, why does ISS, like the Science Faculty Association, Engineering Faculty Association, why do all those things, all those organizations exist? They are also not capable of reducing any fees, not just international tuition fees, any fees. These organizations exist to represent them to ISA. So let's say ISS can take science students' concerns to SU, ESS will take engineering students' concerns to SU, and the same will be done by ISA as well. And they will also be providing services which we need right now. Like international students need services which only ISA can provide. Like, and also I've been hearing a lot about charging DFU. Okay, first of all, implementing a DFU isn't that easy. It has to go through council. That's my understanding. Please do correct me if I'm wrong. So we can kind of separate that discussion for now. And also a lot of SRAs do charge fees, but implementing those fees aren't that easy. So we can look into that later. But yes, I agree that this might not be the perfect proposal, like when you first see it, but this is the best offer the international students got since 2017. I cannot speak of the time before my time in the university, but being an international student who has been immensely involved on this campus on various levels, I know and I can speak that ISA has been doing a fantastic job. And yes, without ISA.
Councillor Bowes, unfortunately, we do only have 4 minutes per person here, but Councillor Dixon, you're up.
Hello. Okay, I'm going to keep it short. I'm going to keep it maybe sweet. Who knows? We're really out here. It's 9 p.m. Okay, so I think the first thing that I want to draw attention to again is this whole entire thing. Like, it was just mentioned in the chat, like, yes, ISA has authority and does amazing work, but council also reserves the right to question the proposals and ask questions and talk about things critically. It's not a personal thing. It's just that's how the system works. We have to approve y'all to become an SRA, right? I just think that's really important to note. I think that's being lost a lot, right? The second thing is that I think that regardless of if we are able to pass the SRA today, whatever your vote is, I'm not going to let people know about my own opinions. ISA is still going to be able to continue to do amazing work because they have the ability to, because they are already doing that without being an SRA. And so I would like people to, consider the fact that if you do have strong reservations, or if you even have mild ones and you are not happy with the structure to an extent where you don't want to vote, this idea that you will be completely eliminating their ability to do work has been proven false by the fact that they do such amazing work without being an SRA and will most likely be able to continue to do so. I just want us to kind of consider every kind of perspective. I just want to make sure that everybody is, just like keeping in mind that ISA has done great work and will continue to do so, hopefully with or without our decision here tonight. Everything that is being said that is critical is something that in either world can potentially be improved upon. Very neutral statement there, but just making sure that everybody is aware of that. Thanks.
Excellent. Thank you, Councillor Dixon. I'll just look for a motion to suspend standing orders because we are just past 9 o'clock here now. Vice President Cron and Councillor Enerson, thank you. We'll look to Vice President Lay.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So I have to say that I want to start by thanking Chanpreet Gurbani and everyone else in the ISA for all of the work that they have done to represent international students this year. I don't want them to feel that this conversation at Council today means that we don't respect the passion and energy that they have brought to their work. I don't want them to think that we don't appreciate what the ISA is doing. I think Councillor Bowes said it best in a way when he said that it is very difficult to build something new from the ground up. It takes time, it is challenging. And I think the concerns that councillors are raising are not a criticism of the job that the ISA leadership has done. It is rather a reflection of the fact that it is very difficult to build something new. It does take time to build something new. And it's not a failing on the part of the ISA that perhaps after under a year in operation, some counselors do still have reservations. I worked with Chanpreet and Gurbani on the UPass. I know that they are very talented. They have a lot to offer to this campus and they are strong advocates. But that being said, there are many legitimate concerns that counselors have raised. One of my major concerns is that we do not have the same length of track record behind the ISA right now that we had behind Aboriginal Students Council when we approved them to be an SRA. They had been in continuous operation for a decade or more. and had a clear and proven ability to make transitions effectively, to transmit organizational knowledge, to build a strong culture. That is something that can only be proven through time and experience. I would also like to note one other thing, which is that this is not a life or death decision. We are not voting today on whether we allow the ISA to continue doing what they're doing. Even if we voted no today or did not make a decision today, the ISA would still be allowed to continue doing the work that they are doing right now and could come back anytime later this year or next year to apply for SRA status then. So I think that this has become a very heated conversation. It does not need to be that heated. We do still have options for the future, and this is not life or death for the good work the ISA is doing. Having said that, I would like to defer the remainder of my speaking time, which is about a minute and 45 seconds, to VP Agarwal, or President Agarwal.
Yeah, thank you, VP Lay. I do want to reiterate everything that VP Lay has said. I'm so grateful for the work the ISA has done. I've been working with them even before my term as president when I was a VP academic, and I think it's incredible how much has been accomplished and how much has been done over the past few months and the past year. That being said, I think the sentiment that's been raised from council, there are a lot of thoughts and a lot of valid concerns. I will say that I'm so grateful for the tone, the respect that has been shown today. And I will again reiterate what VP Lay is saying, that this in no way shows any indication of support for international students. At the end of the day, the bottom line is that the Students' Union is and will be completely in support of international students and representing international students across our campuses. So what I would like to propose is, based on the really good conversation and a lot of the concerns, I would like to propose that we table the motion to another council meeting. So that would potentially give us some more time to actually work with the ISA to work on these concerns and actually create the best proposal moving forward. I don't know if, I'm not sure about the standing orders and the process there, but I would defer to Mr. Speaker as to how that process would work.
Certainly. So on the motion to table, I mean, I do need a secondary. I see Councillor Buchanan already wants to second that. So this motion is non-debatable, non-amendable. I do get to ask for your reasoning, but you have provided that. So in that sense, we would go to a vote. And if you would allow me just a quick minute here to whip up a voting form, we can get to that. So if any of you guys have like elevator music for the next 45 seconds.
Do, 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 do,
do. Vice President Draper, I knew I could count on you.
Do, 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 do. Do ba da 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 da, tall and tan and young and lovely, the girl from Ipanema was walking, and when she passes, each one she passes goes ah. Do 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 do. That's all for me, folks.
That's okay. We're T minus like 10 seconds out on this form. Maybe 15. Oh no, I lost the Zoom chat. Bam! There you go. All right. So, with 17 votes in favor and 7 votes not in favor, we will look to revisit this at the next meeting of council, which is good because it'll allow for people to have some time to come to a more conclusive decision on this. So we will look, Councillor Oliveira, at the to respond to your question right away, we won't look to finish the speakers list. Just because the motion is officially off the table now, it's tabled to the next meeting, so there's nothing technically to discuss, as odd as that sounds. So all that's really left for us is the attendance. And I will look to pull that up here right away. Okay. President Agarwal.
Present.
Excellent. Vice President Draper.
Present.
Thank you. Vice President Lay?
Present.
Thank you. Vice President Cron?
Present.
Thank you. Governor Conrad?
Yep, I'm here.
Councillor Carbajal? Thank you. Councillor Dixon?
Yes, hello.
Perfect. Councillor DeGrano?
Here.
Thank you. Councillor Marquise? Councillor Marquise? Okay. Councillor Oliveira?
Here.
Excellent. Councillor Veloso?
Here.
Excellent. Councillor Yabut? Councillor Yabut? Councillor Burhani?
Here.
Excellent. Councillor Saretsky?
Present.
Councillor Ackerman?
Present.
Perfect. Councillor Baticki?
Here.
Excellent. Councillor Bid?
Present.
Excellent. Councillor Bose?
Here.
Excellent. Councillor Hariharan?
Here.
Excellent. Councillor Montero?
Present.
Excellent. Councillor Buchanan?
Here.
Perfect. Councillor Filipovich?
Present.
Thank you. Councillor Brandwine?
Present.
Councillor Enerson?
Present.
Councillor Badesha?
Present.
Councillor Berzesh? Was not. Or Councillor Berzesh?
Present.
Perfect. Councillor Dillon?
Present.
Awesome. Councillor Fotang?
Present.
Sweet. Councillor Kamani?
Present.
Councillor Corday? Councillor Corday? That's okay. I'm still here. Mark is not. Okay, so that will conclude tonight's meeting of council, and we'll resume the discussion about the ISA at the next meeting of council. Now, I know Vice President Cron, you had mentioned to me earlier today about whether or not you wanted to call a special meeting of council for the 29th. Do you want a moment to elaborate on that before we lose everybody?
You know, that would actually be really great. I think that, so essentially everyone, as you know, because I sent out that thing, and thank you to the 15 people that responded, as to whether or not we would be doing, whether we would be doing a special meeting for the State of the Union update, as well as the financial update from General Manager Mark Dumichel. And so whether we would be doing that next week, so an off-council Tuesday at 6 p.m., or on October 6th at a regular council meeting, the problem being that Mark can talk a lot. And indeed, these are very important discussions to be having, and we want to really give it the time that it's worth. I am tempted to call a special meeting of council for next week at 6 p.m. I would love it if you would message me, please, and let me know if there's absolutely no way you could make it. Our dear president, Joel Agarwal, has already agreed to cancel a trip with his friends to Elk Island if he had to make it. So if he can make that sacrifice, I wonder if you could too. But please do let me know if that's going to be absolutely impossible for you. And we'll see how many people that's true for. That's really all I had to say.
Vice President Kron, looking at the standing orders, it looks to me like the Speaker of Council or the Council Administration Committee or like a member can bring it up in Council, but the Speaker can call for a special meeting of Council. And I think that at the beginning of the meeting when we had our conversation, it could have made sense, but seeing as how this meeting went and the fact that we have to table such a large motion that's going to require such, like, I guess it's still going to require heavy conversation at the next meeting. I think it would be smart to call a special meeting of Council for next week.
Okay, thank you for that recommendation. So please do send me a WhatsApp message because I don't want the messages to go away once I leave here. So that would be helpful, but I am leaning heavily towards calling a special meeting as well. So then we can just devote it to this purpose. It may only be an hour and a half long meeting, and then we can all get back to our lives and what such. But thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Okay, Vice President Kron, I'll ask that you and I will correspond a little bit. We can touch base with Mark, but then we'll look to call the special meeting of Council at latest on Thursday. So Thursday by end of day will be the latest that we'll notify members of Council about a meeting, just so that we don't leave them too in the lurch.
Absolutely. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Excellent. Okay, thank you, Vice President Kron. And with that, I will bid you all adieu. Thank you for tuning in tonight. I'm glad it's not too late that we're getting to get out of here. But I hope you all have a wonderful evening, and I will potentially see you next week. So, but with that, I hope everybody has a good night.
Hi, everyone. Have a good
night. Bye, everybody. Have a fantastic night.
Bye, everyone.
Adios.